ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा महिं ददाति स्वपदान् धियं. वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुधापदकमलम् श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं दं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदां सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च. नमोऽं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने. नमस्ते सरस्वती देवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणे. नमोऽं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमती भक्तिसिद्धान्त सरस्वती नामिने. श्रीवर्षभानवी देवी दैताया कृपाब्दये कृष्णसम्बन्ध विज्ञानं दायिने प्रभवे नमः. माधुर्योज्ज्वल प्रेमाद्या श्रीरूपानुगभक्तिदा श्रीगौरकरुणाशक्ति विग्रहाय नमोऽस्तुते. नमस्ते गौरवाणि श्रीमूर्तये दीनधारिणे रूपानुगविरुद्धापसिद्धान्तध्वान्तहारिणे. नमो गौरकिशोराय साक्षाद्वैराग्यमूर्तये विप्रलम्बरसाम्बोधे पादाम्बुजायते नमः. नमो भक्तिविनोदाय सच्चिदानन्दनामिने गौरशक्तिस्वरूपाय रूपनोगवरायते. गौराविर्भवभूमिस्त्वं निर्देष्टा सचनप्रिया वैष्णवा सार्वभौम श्रीजगन्नाथाय ते नमः. वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्येव च पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. मदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रभाय देय कृष्ण चैतन्य नाम्ने गौरत्विषे नमः. पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्येव च सदानं भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः. पतिरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं वक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तसात्वियं. हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगल्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कान्त राधा कान्त नमोऽस्तुते. जयदां सुरतो पाङ्गोर्मम मन्दमदेर्गति मत्सर्वस्वपदाम्बोजौ राधामदनमोहनौ. दिव्यवृन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमादौ श्रीमन्रत्नाकरसिंहासनस्थौ श्रीश्रीराधा श्रीलगोविन्ददेवौ प्रेष्ठालिभिः सेव्यमानौ स्मरामि. श्रीमन्रासरसारम्भीमं श्रीवटतटस्थिता कर्षन्वेणुस्वनिर्गोपैर्गोपिनाथा श्रियेऽस्तु नाम. तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गीराधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषमानुसुदे देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये. जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. सर्वत्र गोविन्द नाम संकीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द. ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवदां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराण मुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् द्वामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी मम त्वा मनसंधदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. नमोऽस्तु देव्यासविशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायतपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्ण प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रदीपाम् प्रपन्नभारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः. सर्वोपनिषदोगावोदोग्धा गोपालनन्दना पार्थो सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् വസുദേവ സുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാചേതൃജലാഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സുതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കണം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേബീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരതപങ്കജക്കലിമലപ്രദ്വം ശ്രീശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്തുന്യുന്ദി ദിവ്യൈ സവേർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സാമഗാ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിതഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദു സുരാസുരഗണേ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ സോ വേദാംഗം The limbs of the Purusha Vedam. And the last one is Kalpam. So, Kalpam is called the Veda Purusha's arms. Kalpam is the one which introduces action into a person. After studying Vedam, there is a lot of things spoken in the Vedam in reference to action. All that action is spoken through the Kalpam, through Kalpam. Right. So, after learning other things like Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Chandasa, Niruktam, Jyotisham and all that, finally it is this Kalpam that executes everything, puts everything into action. Right. So, for example, due to the sinful reactions of our life, right, we must do some good things also in life. If everything is bad in life, what we do, then that means we leave this world with a lot of bad vasanas. Because you know very well that all our actions in this world has its own reactions, isn't it? And mostly we are a part of a bad system which creates a lot of bad impact in the world. Trouble for others, trouble for the nature, trouble for ourselves. This is what we do here. And we leave this world after doing all this, isn't it? So therefore good deeds also has to be done. Something should be done in life before we leave this world. Something good in this world, right? So to do this, we must have the mantra, correct pronunciation and meaning, right? And similarly, to do karma, we must have the necessary material things. For doing sadhana, you need a mantra and the proper pronunciation and all that. But for doing karma, you need the material aids. Right? And then, as Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, it should be, the result should be offered to Krishna. Kayena vacha, that thing. Yeah. So, what we have learned in other branches of Vedangam, like Shiksha, Vyagaranam, Niruktam, Jyotisham, and all, Chandasa, those things, They have to be used in action, all of them. And when the action is performed, this kalpam comes into practice. Right? Kalpam deals with all those matters, like how should a particular ritual be done? How do you perform a ritual? Right? And what compunctions or karma should be performed by man of each caste or varnam? And in which state or ashram, whether when you are in a brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, sannyasa ashram, in which ashram you do this, and whether brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, they all have different karma to perform. So all this is decided by the kalpam. Then which ritual involves which mantra, which materials and which devata, all these decisions. And then finally, how many priests should be present, what they call as ritviks, should be present in the karma, in the rituals, and then what size of vessels should be used, and what shape, and all that. You can get all the pictures of these vessels used in the rituals. They're available in the YouTube also, I think. It may look very simple to us, but it's more to it than that. So there are number of Kalpasutram by the sages. Krishna Yajurvedam, there is six rishis: Abhasambham, Bodhayanan, Vaikhanasa, Satyashada, Bharadvaja and Agnivesha. They all written Kalpasutrams. And similarly for Rigvedam, Ashulayana's Kalpam is the one mostly invoked. There's also other Kalpams, Kathyayana Maharshi has confirmed. There's so many rishis who are involved with the Kalpasutrams. It's too much, a lot of it spoken in there. So, coming back to this Vedam, Vedavurusham. I've been discussing this Sunday, that apaurushayatvam of the Vedam, right? This has to be little bit thinking you have to do in these things to understand it properly, right? What I'm talking about, right? You have to think about it a little bit. What it is that Paurusham means what? Our ability. Ability or Paurusham. Apaurusham means that which is not possible for us to do, beyond our ability. Apaurushato. Apaurushayam, it's called. So, Vedam is spoken as Apaurushayam. Right? Vedam is Apaurushayam. Now, how do you know that Vedam is Apaurushayam? This is an important question. Because when we discuss things, everything should be accepted on a logical basis also. It's not everything is just telling you everything, or this is it like this, you just accept it. No, it's not like that. It has a reasoning behind it and logic also in that. For example, I mentioned last time that some people, some great personalities, for example, they will say that I have just spoken, I don't know how I spoke. It has, Krishna has made me to speak like that, and Krishna has dictated me from inside. And some people will accept that, some people won't. It's natural in this world. People are, as I mentioned to you, that Kavya Ganga Ganapati's story with Ramana Maharshi. That Ramana Maharshi sat in front of Kavya Ganga Ganapati, and Kavya Ganga Ganapati wrote 400 verses. Sitting there in front of him. 400 verses he compiled, glorifying Sri Parvati. That's called Uma Sahasram. Now, some people will accept that because it was inspired by Ramana Maharshi from within. Those who know about Ramana Maharshi will accept that. But those who don't know anything about Ramana Maharshi, they won't accept that. They will say, because you have faith in him, you are saying like this, and therefore you are accepting it. But I don't have that faith in Ramana Maharshi, so why should I accept that? In the same way, Prabhupada said that Krishna has dictated from within me. This comes purports on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada's purports on Bhagavatam. Krishna has dictated. So those who are accepting Prabhupada as an authority will accept that. But those who are not accepting Prabhupada as authority, they will not accept that. They will say, well, you have faith in Prabhupada, or you are his disciple, or you are his follower, therefore you are accepting that. But why should I accept it? I don't know Prabhupada. I don't know whether Krishna is dictated or not. So, now in this situation also, it means apaurushayam, because it is dictated by higher authority. But the problem is that apaurushayatvam of Prabhupada or Ramana Maharshi or somebody else like that, whoever it is, is only for those who have accepted the authority of that person, not for everybody else. But in Vedam's case, it is not like that. This is what I am trying to say. When it comes to Vedam, The authority of the Vedam as apaurusheyam is not like the way we are talking about Prabhupada's dictation or Ravana Maharshi's dictation to others. There is a difference. That's what we are going to talk about today. Right. So, for example, suppose you have some reverence towards some great personality, right? Then you can accept him, that person, right? Great personality. But suppose I think that somebody is a fraud, then I won't be able to accept it, would it? You may have, in this world, you will find all these kind of situations. Some people are very devoted to, like you can see sometimes, someone is very devoted to some great person. In his mind, he is feeling reverence towards somebody. So when that person says something, you accept it completely. But somebody else who doesn't feel like that towards him, he wouldn't accept that, would he? He'll say, I know him, he is a fraud, I'm not going to accept it, he will say. Like that, right? So, so this discussion is all about how should we talk to a person who does not accept the authority of the Vedam? You see, how to talk to a person who does not accept the authority of the Vedam, right? So, often people will say that I was inspired from within by some higher power. Poets will say they wrote certain poetry inspired by some divine power from within, and that's why this poetry became so popular and things like that, right? So that is one kind of apaurushayatvam, the one what we're talking about, right? Now, if that what he has compiled or written, just like what Prabhupada has spoken or what Ramana Maharshi or Gaudiya Gandakanapati has written, if that is not a pramanam, pramanam means authority, then it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. If suppose it is, some people will accept it, some people won't accept it. So, if it is not an authority, it doesn't matter. Because those who want to accept it can accept it. Vedam is not like that. This is the important thing to know. That Vedam Vedam is not like based on a person in that way. Behind everything, it's like a very strong wall built. Behind all Vedic knowledge, all the knowledge in this world, whatever it may be, all that knowledge, behind that, there is a very sound, powerful wall built, and that's Vedam. I will explain it a little bit more, so you will get to understand why it is spoken like that, right? So, for example, sometimes we say, one Rishi, Vishwamitra Maharshi, right? Vishwamitra Maharshi is the Rishi for Gayatri. Suppose I say to them, this has come from Vishwamitra Maharshi, right? But the other person says, Vishwamitra is a great personality for you, but not for me. Why should I accept that? You may have heard about him, known about him, so you are accepting Vishwamitra as authority. But for me, he is not authority. If he says like that, what do you say then? Right? So, in my understanding, because I understand who Vishwamitra Maharshi is, that I can see the problem, that I may accept Vishwamitra's authority and I may say that Vishwamitra has compiled this Gayatri and given to this world. But when it comes to Vedam, it's different again, right? Main thing to know is that even when we talk about the rishis in this knowledge never had any what we call as vichedam. Vichedam means that it was never broken down any time. It was never broken down any time, right? Broken down means, for example, when devastation happens, you know, we have Nityam, Naimityam, Prakritam, Atyantikam, four kinds of devastation, pralayam happens, right? If you ask a question that during devastation, is this knowledge lost? What happens? When you say some knowledge is not broken, I mean the continuity is not gone, what happens during devastation? Is it not lost? Right? But the problem is, to know about devastation itself, you have to get it from the Veda. Do you understand? We say about devastation, right? Now you know that we talk about the four kinds of devastation, isn't it? Where did that knowledge come from? Also came from the Veda. Also came from the Veda, right? Otherwise, the right understanding is like this, that if you think that this knowledge was lost during devastation, they don't accept. Vedam is not acceptable like that. Even during the devastation, this knowledge is not lost. They say, it is like this. When you go to sleep at night, you have some knowledge in you about various things, isn't it? While sleeping, you have lost it. But when you wake up, it's all coming back to you again. In the same way, Vedam is also like that. Even during devastation, it's not lost. It's still there somewhere. But it comes back again when the devastation is over. Devastation is over. Just like we lose during sleep, all our knowledge of this world, is it not? Every night when we go to deep sleep, you have completely given up all knowledge what you have about this world. Everything what you know. And then in the morning, the whole thing comes back again. How does that happen? This is how you have to understand Vedam. Vedam is existing all the time. It's never gone. Even a very difficult cyclone or devastation happens in the whole world, the Vedam knowledge in the Vedam is not lost. It is still there. It comes back as and when it is necessary, right? So that breaking up, that vichedam in the devastation is not called vichedam. Vichedam, right? In the last kalpam, because after every kalpam, devastation happens, isn't it? After every kalpam. So in the last kalpam, whatever in order the Vedam existed, then and it was taught and learned, it is the same system exists in the next kalpam also, right? And only thing what happened was in this kalpam, in this particular time, it has Vishwamitra, through Vishwamitra Maharshi, it has come. This particular knowledge of the Gayatri. Similarly, other hymns also in the Vedam through different rishis. What I am saying is, even the rishis also didn't start this. Knowledge always exists. But it keeps coming through each kalpam, through different rishis to this world. This is how Vedam used to be. Vedam's authority is spoken. That means there is nothing you can think of more authoritative than Vedam after Vedam. With Vedam, everything comes to a dead end. It's like they say, the buck stops with the president, they say, isn't it? Something like that. With everything stops at Vedam at the end. Vedam is the final authority. Right. So, now, how Vishwamitra got this knowledge, right? Somebody instructed him, somehow it has come to him, right? Say, for example, Lord Brahma has given it to him, this revelation to him, and Krishna has instructed Brahma, right? But it is not spoken where Krishna got it from. isn't it? It's not spoken. Well, Krishna God, you have the right to ask that question, isn't it? We say Vishwamitra got it from Brahma. Brahma Bhagavadam says that it received from Krishna. But where did Krishna get it from? That's the question, right? And if it was like that, normally, suppose you have received some knowledge from somebody, you will mention that, I received this from this authority, right? But Brahma hasn't spoken anything about it. And if Brahma has given it to Vishwamitra, Vishwamitra also hasn't said anything about it, where he received it from, right? So, normally in the when you receive knowledge in the disciplic succession, you will always say that I have received this knowledge as a recognition that I have received this from this authority. Like you will see in the Bhagavatam often, even Shuka Brahmarshi saying this. I heard this from Agastya Maharshi, this story of Ajamila. Like that he will mention that. Or Vidura will say, I heard this from Maitreya. Like that, all the rishis do that. But here, in the Vedam, you don't find it like this. Anybody saying anything that I have received from somebody. No mention at all, anywhere. Right? So, none of the rishis will say who gave them the knowledge. Who gave them this knowledge. Then, because as disciples normally, you have to say from the Guru's face, I heard this, and that's what I am saying. You will see this all the time in the Bhagavadam, isn't it? Many, many places spoken like this. They will refer to somebody who have, from whom they heard these things, right? So, then Mimamsaga. Mimamsa is part of the Vedam, isn't it? Mimamsaga is also, there is Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa. So, they are mostly concerned with the Karmakandam of the Vedam, right? And even in their system also, they have teachers and the students. Vedam is taught through like that, right? So, in their system, I mean, we are talking about the Karmakandam now. In that Karmakandam, which is a major part of the Vedam, right? That it is followed by all those who are studying Karmakandam or Mimamsa. And as he mentioned before, everything depends on the pronunciation of the hymns, Vedic hymns. So, suppose one person makes a mistake, you can ask somebody else. Because a lot of people are studying the Vedam at different places, right? Say you have a doubt about pronunciation, then you have somebody else to ask, right? Or if somebody else has some doubt, they can ask you about it. This is how the doubts were clarified in the past, right? And they will ask also, from where did you learn this? Is this the right method, right? So that is called paraspara shodhanam. That means mutually checking the authenticity of your pronunciation, right? So in that way, because it was practiced at different places, in different parts of the country, right? Same system existed everywhere. Therefore, even if by chance somewhere mistakes happens, you have other places to verify that, whether this is correct or not. Right? So, if you start something new, then, say, everything is broken down and you are starting something new, then the question will come, how do you know that what you are saying now is the correct thing? Right? Whether the swaram, udattam, anudattam, all this is correct. How do you know? You will not get an answer for that. Therefore, it is better to understand it this way, that this parambara of teaching the Vedam existed in an unbroken way, which was never broken. That means, lot of people learned Vedam at different places in the country, in different parts, different Vedams, right? And in that way it survived like that. It was not broken anywhere. Somewhere if there was a mistake, you will ask somewhere else, is this the right way to say, or do you agree with that? And if they say it is the correct one, then it is acceptable. Both are acceptable. If there is a difference of opinion, you have another place to verify it. So this is how this knowledge was surviving in this world. Not through books or digital recording or anything. Simply through the people's memory and the Pandits and the Brahmanas who studied Vedam, they, at different parts of the country, they followed the same system. And if you have doubts anywhere, you always have other places to go and verify it, about it. This system existed, right? So, this is a part of that apaurushayatvam, apaurushayatvam of the Vedam, right? So, sometimes, certain things, even if you say that Krishna has inspired me from inside, right, still it won't be acceptable to the world. Some people won't accept it, right? So, we will come to that, what that means actually, right? So, first thing to know is this avichinatum, that means unbroken system of the Vedam. Unbroken means you can't bring time into it, time factor. Every other knowledge in this world is controlled by time, isn't it? Say, for example, you have developed some knowledge about some material topic, material science. That knowledge has come at your time. Or some, like the scientists and all, they develop different kinds of knowledge at different times. They all come up and they are subject to change also. But Vedam is concerned is not like that. It always existed, Vedam. And even during different kalpam, or days of Lord Brahma, it existed. But in different kalpams, through different rishis, it came to this world. So that is the reason why the rishis don't say that I received this knowledge from another person. Normally the system is, if you receive knowledge from someone, you will always acknowledge that in your deliberations, when you talk about it. Is it not? That's normal system in the Vedic tradition. In the Puranams also you will find, and also in the Itihasams, Bharatam, everywhere you will see this mention, that this knowledge I came to know about this. Like you will see Krishna also says these things in the Bhagavatam. For example, you will say that I heard this, there was an incident happened between our ancestors Yadu and Dattatreya. I heard and I will tell you that to Uddhava, he says. Krishna says like that. And similarly in the Bhagavatam you will find in several places saying they are, from whom they got it, this information or knowledge. And they will repeat that. I received this information from Agastya. Also from Angiras Maharshi. There is that six kind of Chitragedu story. It came like that, isn't it? So what does that mean? It is normal tradition in the Vedic system to acknowledge where this knowledge came from. But when it comes to Vedam, you find no reference like that. What does that indicate? You see? You have to think like this also. That when it comes to Vedam, nobody says anything where it came from. None of the rishis will say, I received from this person or that person. That is not spoken like that. Right? So, so that is why it's called avichinnam. Avichinnam means knowledge always remains in this world, but different times it is revealed to different people in different times, in different kalpams. And through them it came in, like that, right? So, among the Vedangam, now, Kalpasutram, you were talking about, right? So this Kalpasutram mainly refers to karma, how to perform the yagam, homam, yam, and everything, right? So, for example, there is karmam mentioned as shrauda karmam, smarta karmam. That means based on the shruti and based on the smriti. Then upanayanam and all other kinds of karma. There was about 40 samskarams for the brahmanam. So, and then again based on varnashama dharmam, what one has to do. So, all that karma side of the life, in person's life, and there are very, 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 very complex things, this karma, right? And that is what is in the kalpam. Do you get idea now what kalpam is about? Kalpasutram it is called. All kalpasutram is all the very complicated and very complex, extremely complex nature of the karmam involved in the Vedam. Explanation of that is kalpam. For example, if you want to perform yagam, say Rajasuyam or Ashwamedham or anything, there are quite a complex information on that to be followed, instructions there. Very, very complicated ones. Complex in the sense that the mantram that is to be chanted and then all the ingredients to be collected for the sacrifice. Then all the other things like Jyotisham associated with that. Lot of aspects to it. And in order all that to comply with everything, if you do everything perfectly, then the result will come. Otherwise not, right? So Kalpasutram is that side of the Vedam, which talks and discusses about all these things. If you ask where do you find that, you will find that in Rigvedam, for example, that there is Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad, the four things in the Vedam, right? Which is called, that mantram is called also Samhita, Mantra Samhita, right? Then there is Brahmanam. So some people who are only studying the Samhita or the Vedam, right? They will take Samhita very seriously, may not take Brahmanam very seriously. Because it is so vast to study all these things, right? And depending on different people's capacity, they will accept that part of the Vedam, what they find it necessary, right? So, mantram is what brahmacharis learn. Brahmanam is the one householders follow. Aranyakam is for the vanaprastham. And sannyasi is supposed to learn Upanishads. This is that system for that, right? So, if you say about kalpam, kalpasutram, what they mentioned here, there is an argument about it that they were written much later, according to the interest of the people who are studying, but that is also rejected. Understanding that Vedam cannot exist without kalpam, right? And just like, the problem is this, I'll tell you what the problem is. Problem is, the modern people, modern, how do you call it, historians, or people who are trying to fix a date for all these things, they go into this research mode. And when they do the research, they are saying that, oh, this kalpam was not there before. They have given some dates to it. And they created confusion about this. Similarly, they are saying Upanishads also, they don't accept it, that it was written, it was in the Vedam. They say some people were singing some songs later, and that's what is Upanishads. They give their own comments on that, right? And they say Bhagavatam also they are rejecting on this basis, right? So, because what they are saying is that, look at this argument, what they bring forward. They say that you are saying that by simply chanting the holy name, you will realize the truth. Simply by chanting the holy name. Where is the authority for that? This is their question. You see? This is how they ask the question. How you accept this understanding? Then Bhagavatam says that, isn't it? Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarvabhava Pranashanam. The last verse. Just because you chant the holy name a lot, you are going to realize the truth, absolute truth, what the truth is. And where is the authority for that? They will ask this question, right? Now, if you ask a logic for that, you can't give any logic, can you? How will you give a logical answer to that question, right? That's what I'm saying. Logic or yukti, you can only give to certain things in this world. Certain things in this world, right? So, but there are certain things in this world for which you cannot apply logic into it. I will explain this a little bit more so you'll understand this, right? So, similarly, in the Vedam, there are a lot of things spoken like this. Like, for example, if you perform certain... if you perform certain karma, Jyotishtomam, there are many listed like that, right? You will get certain results after death, it says in the Vedam. This is why it is so difficult, because people are always worried about this life in this world. They never think any moment about life after death, right? And there's a lot of things in the Vedam which will tell you that if you do these things, different sacrifices, after death you will receive these benefits. This will be the result from that. It says in the Vedam. Now, for an ordinary person, if you say this, he doesn't find it interesting. He says, where is the proof? That's what the answer will be, isn't it? So, for such people, it is no point in discussing this. It's not possible, because they haven't grown enough in the spiritual side. That's why. Completely absorbed in the body, living in this world, thinking that I am this body, and this world is real. Those who are living like that, for them, many of the Vedic injunctions won't make any sense to them. Do you see the problem? So, because there are a lot of things in the Vedam, which if you read, and they tell you the results of that, is all after death, what will happen, right? So, most probably, people will decide like that, that we don't know whether what you are saying is all true or not. How do I know that you are saying so many things? After that, this will happen, that will happen, right? So, when you come to that set mindset, right, what you have to think at that moment is that when you see the complexity of these sacrifices, yagam, homam, yajnam, all that, you can understand, if you are a little bit intelligent, you will think like this. What is that? That these are not just one person sat down and made up all these things on his own accord. right? You will start thinking, there must be something behind it. If a person is saying that such a complex and complicated yagam or sacrifices, all of them, whether it is Rajasuyam. Now, when you see the situation, Yudhishthira Maharaj, after Mahabharata war, he was told that you perform Ashwamedham to free yourself from the sinful reactions of that. Yeah? Now, how come Yudhishthira accepted that straight away and performed Rajasuyam, three Ashwamedham? Isn't it? Similarly, Prithu performed 99 Ashwamedham. Mahabali performed Ashwamedham. Now, where is the result of all that? Do you see the difference? They had the belief in the Vedam to such an extent that they knew that if Vedam is saying something, this Ashwamedham sacrifices involves quite a lot. Preparations and money involved, the amount of wealth involved, and the personalities involved, it's quite a lot and requires a lot of preparation. Now, would you say that Yudhishthira was so stupid that he was willing to do this three Ashwamedhams to free from the reaction of his Mahabharata war, that he was willing to do that? So where did he get that belief from? We are finding it difficult to understand, isn't it? We are rejecting it straight away, saying that all these sacrifices, all, what does it mean? We don't know what will happen. There is no... So what it is we have lost faith in the Vedam, like the way Yudhishthira had the faith in the Vedam. This is what it is. Do you get the point? You see, Yudhishthira, Ambarish and many others, Mahabali and all that, they had complete faith in the Vedam. And that is why they were able to perform those sacrifices. Hundreds of Ashwamedham sacrifices is not so easy. Prithu Maharaj did that. Prithu's case, the result was there quite a bit. Because Vena destroyed the whole place and Prithu brought it back into life again. Is it not? And made people's life extremely happy. More than what even Ramachandra has done, they say about Prithu. So, what does this indicate? We are rejecting something without properly thinking about it. If Yudhishthira had the faith, Ambarish Maharaj had the faith, Mahabali had the faith, and many others, Prajina Barhis had the faith, and so many others, Prithu had the faith, how come we are more intelligent than all these people? Is it? We are thinking like that, aren't we? Because that shows how dull we are, actually. Not that more intelligent, how dull we are. This is what we have to learn from the Vedam. In Vedam, when we study these personalities, you should also evaluate them, what level of intelligence they had. That we are rejecting all these Vedic sacrifices on the pretext that, oh, you cannot show me any results from that. So therefore I am rejecting it. I don't think Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam or Agnishtamam, all these sacrifices, has any benefit from that. It's just a waste of time and I can reject it like that. Now, if you look at Shastram and look at these great personalities, Yudhishthira was the emperor of the planet. He was able to accept Vedam and he was able to perform Ashwamedham one after the other, and he totally believed that his sinful reactions from the Mahabharata war will be removed by performing Ashwamedham sacrifices. Equally, Rajasuyam. Yudhishthira performed Rajasuyam later, is it not? And similarly, Ugrasena wanted to perform Rajasuyam, which we'll study in the Garga Bhagavatam, how Varuna performed Rajasuyam. So all the sacrifices in the Vedam, if you reject them saying that, oh, there is no proof for anything, who is dull? They or us? Think it like that. Think about it that way. Is it not? That are they intelligent or are we intelligent? We are dull, actually. This is the problem. And it is the same problem with this modern people also. Modern historians who are trying to give fix the date for this the Vedam and also for the sacrifices and everything. They reject completely all these things. I will discuss the sacrifice a little bit more in detail. You will see the fun. How the modern world look at these sacrifices and the mistakes they are making while trying to understand the sacrifices. Completely due to misunderstanding or lack of faith in all these things. It is very easy to reject something, saying that, oh, it's all useless. Vedam, who says this is all authorized? Who, some old people have written down something? And this is how they have projected an image about Vedam in this world. And misled the whole world in that way. And they rejected the Vedam to such an extent that they think that it is people who had nothing else to do in life. They have written down all these songs and verses in that way, right? So, in the same way, while pronouncing the Vedam, you remember what we discussed, Shiksha Shastram, right? How particular they were about the pronunciation. With the same way they were particular about while performing the karmam also, sacrifices also. So, the karmam that is spoken in the Vedam and the results that you will get from the executing those karmam, that relationship, nobody will be able to establish that with logic. Do you understand? So, you see, everything in this world, people want a logic, isn't it? Science is based on this thing called a logic. Or you have to prove it. You have to prove it. They'll say, you prove it, that if you perform this sacrifice, you will get this result. If you prove it, then we will believe you. That's what they say. But people like Yudhishthira, Prajina Barhis, Prithu, Mahabali, and many others, Parikshit also, what they are saying is that there are certain things in this world which you can, your logic cannot apply for that. That only if I show it to you, you will accept it. That logic won't work there. On what strength did they perform all these sacrifices? Because of they had complete faith in the Vedam. Who? All these great souls, right? They had total faith in the Vedam. They knew, if Vedam is saying like this, then it must be there, the result. Even though it cannot be shown to you by any means. Now, some rishis told him, who, Dhaumya, Vedavyas and others, to Yudhishthira to perform Ashwamedham. And Yudhishthira performed Ashwamedham to free himself from the reaction of so many people getting killed, because king's life is not easy. They have to do certain things which is not always very pleasant. That you have to punish people and you have to fight war, and in that process you will upset a lot of people, their life. So that reaction will come from that. Like if they perform good deeds, they get the good results also. In the same way, if they perform bad things, they get the bad results as well. So, these things you cannot prove by logic. That's the first thing to know. You should study Bhagavatam, Mahabharatam and all in this understanding. Otherwise, it won't make any sense to anything. It won't make any sense because you are reading all these big things they have done. And you are thinking that you have no faith in those things. Then what's the point in reading it? Whether it is Yudhishthira and whether it is somebody else, it is the same thing. That you have to remember that they knew Vedam better than us. They had more faith in the authority of the Vedam. We don't have the faith, and that is our problem. It's not their problem. We have developed this way of thinking in our mind that only if you prove it to me, I will believe it. This is our mentality. What Shastram is saying is, there are a lot of things in this world which cannot be proven by any means. You have to accept it. And the way they have found out that was, that the one example of that is this chanting the holy name. Now, chanting the holy name If Bhagavatam is saying like this, repeatedly in the Bhagavatam it is saying, which one? That if you chant the holy name, your papam, sinful reactions will go. Nama Sangirtanam Yasya Sarva Bhava. This is the final statement of the Bhagavatam, isn't it? The very last words is that. Now, you will say, you can say, you cannot prove it to me, so I won't accept it. You can reject it that way, if you like. Yeah? Because I can't prove it to you. How can I prove it to you? But Bhagavatam, where did this come from? It came from the Vedam. It's not in the Bhagavatam only. It came from the Vedam. Vedavyasa Maharshi put that in the Bhagavatam. That's all what he has done. But it has come from the Vedam. So therefore, the authority of the Vedam you can't question. You accept that first. Just like the way Yudhishthira accepted. Prajina Barhis accepted. Prithu Maharaj accepted. And similarly, Ambarish accepted. Now, you look at Ambarish's case, right? We're studying Ambarish's story in the ninth canto. Ambarish performed this one whole year, Dwadashi Vratam. Is it not? And he had total faith in that, what he was doing. That is how he executed that. 12 months he stayed in Mathuvanam and performed this Dwadashi Vratam. In so many other places also in the Bhagavatam, you will find similar things spoken. Where did all this come from? It all comes from the Vedam. Vedam, right? So what happened was, over a period of time, now with the communication becoming more and more easier in the world, the Western scholars, they were more interested to know about this Vedam. Some of them wanted to understand Vedam. So what they did, that they started realizing that there is something in the Vedam which we don't fully understand. But at the same time, they want to find out what it is. So some of them have started coming to witness this Yagam, many places, when Yagam happened. And they used to bring with them a lot of cameras and instruments to study the Yagam, right? And they also heard that due to performing the Yagam, Yagam has an influence on the environment. Yeah? On the environment. So, and through the camera and the instruments, they were measuring that. They were taking the photographs, and they were using these instruments to check the environment, to see how much it is impacted, the Yagam has impacted on the. You can look at all these things. It's on the YouTube, a lot of these things, right? So, and then after that they say, some of them, you know that Stahl, Fred Stahl, who wrote Agni and all, he's all like that. There are many others like that. He's not the only one. There are many more who come with a lot of sophisticated equipment to study the change in the environment due to performance of a Yagam. What happens, right? And after that, they have observed that there are some changes happening in the world. So then they are accepting it. There is something happening due to this sacrifices, right? But what you don't know is there are many things happening which is not known to the camera or to your instruments. That they don't know. You see, because they are so stuck in their view of thinking, in their way of thinking, they are thinking only what the camera and the instrument is recording, we will accept it. There are many things what's happening which cannot be measured by any instrument or which cannot be photographed by any camera while performing these sacrifices. That they don't know. So therefore, they are finding that difficult part of it. Now, you know, while performing Ashwamedham, it is not environment for purpose you are doing that. There are a lot of subtle things behind Ashwamedham which will have an impact on your karma. That's the main thing behind it, right? So, this is the difficulty in Vedam. That Vedam is saying to you certain things which are so subtle and which cannot be perceived by your own senses or your own instruments. And that is the results of the Vedam is talking about. So what do you do then? Suppose you keep on insisting that everything I should show you the results, only then you will accept it. Otherwise you can't accept it. Neither Yudhishthira, nor Parikshit, nor Ambarish, nor other Prajnavarhis or Prithu spoke like this, like the way we are talking today. Do you see the problem? Today, we are all saying that unless you show me the result, I won't accept it. If had Parikshit and Yudhishthira and Prajnavarhis and Prithu, they all lived at so different times, is it not? You know that. They didn't live in the same time. Yudhishthira lived at a much different time than Prithu. Prithu lived at a much different time than Prajnavarhis. Prajnavarhis we are talking about long way back ago. Yeah. So, such a big change in timings, all these great personalities were able to accept Veda. And they believed that if those Vaidika karmam, like this Yagam, Homam, all these things, if it was performed, the result will come from that. They were able to accept it. We are the only people in this modern world now find it difficult to accept it. We think, oh well, there is no proof, so how can I accept it? We are asking. They didn't ask that question. Do you understand? Their difference between them and us. We are so dull-headed and we have become so degraded. We have lost all faith in the Shastram. Totally useless we have become. That we are unable to understand, and we start looking at them as though they are dull or they are thick. Actually, we are the ones who are thick. They are not thick. In such a long span of time, all these great personalities were able to perform these sacrifices and able to derive benefits from that, results from that. Why we alone feel this problem today? And we think we are very intelligent, aren't we? This is the problem, right? So, and then our stupidity is this, we bring these cameras and instruments and trying to measure everything and saying that if it is showing in my meter, the reading, then I will accept it. If it is not showing in the meter, I can't accept it. On that, with the same mentality, we are rejecting the so many things in the Vedam. Vedam is saying if you chant the holy name, that it will take away your sinful reactions. It's a very categoric statement in the Vedam. Vedam says, due to sinful reactions only, you have got this body. This type of body what we have today is due to our sinful reactions. And this sinful reactions has come in the form of the body, which is called Prarabdham. That. Vedam says like that. Now, we don't believe in it. We say, oh, that's alright. That's our attitude. We won't accept that. And then, when Vedam says, if you chant the holy name seriously, for a long time, a lot of your sinful reactions will get wiped out. And you will come out of this. And not once in the Bhagavatam, in many, 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 many places. Shiva Brahmarshi says, isn't it? Not in one place, right? So, Yannamadheyam, Riyamana Madhura, Padanskalanva, Vivisho, Granan, Puman, Vimukta Karmargala, Uttamamgarim, Prapno, the Yakshani, Nado, Kalau, Jana, 12th canto. You will see. Very categorically saying like this. Who? Shuka Brahmarshi. Now, when Shuka Brahmarshi says that, we are saying, well, prove it to me. Then I will accept it. Shuka Brahmarshi says, well, that's your misfortune. If this is your attitude, they know what they are talking about. They are he is saying, "Yan namadheyam riyamana madhura padan skalan va vivasho granan puman vimukta karmargala uttamam gadim prapnodi yakshandi nadau kalau jana." That is his final words on the chanting the holy name, 12th canto. So when he says that, how are we taking it? We are saying, "Well, this old man Shuka Brahmarshi, he is saying something. Who knows it is correct or not?" And then you chant for a few days and then you give it up at the end. This is what happens to most of the people. That's why these things should be presented in a proper way to them, people, when you say to them that when you talk about the authority of the Vedam, that if you have accepted the authority of Vedavyas and Daumya and all other rishis, Shukabrahma, she also belongs to the same category of people who believes in the authority of the Vedam, is it not? And it is on the strength of the authority of the Vedam that he is talking to us. He has 100% faith in the authority of the Vedam, and we have 0% faith in any of these things. And therefore we argue on a stupid level, completely stupid. And that is why the difficulty today is people have no faith in all these things, in the Shastram and its authority. They are just thinking this is, they say, oh, Prabhupada says so, we will take it. Prabhupada has come and gone now. Now, you can't accept things based on one person saying something. Authority is Vedam. That is the point you have to remember. Environment changes while Yagam performed, right? For example, this Adhiratram was performed, a rain is supposed to happen after that. And it happened many times. This has happened all the times. So when the rain comes, oh, they say, oh, this is, that's correct, because we have seen it, so I believe it. But the rain at the end of Adhiratram is not the only goal. That is only a side effect from that. That after Adhiratram was performed, there will be a rain. But there are a lot more other things happening after the Adhiratram that they cannot record it by a camera or by a meter or anything like that, right? So that is the difference, right? And Vedam is not interested in any of these topics, what you are noting down through camera and instruments. Do you understand? That Vedam has no interest whatsoever in those things what you are interested through the camera and the instruments. When a yagam is performed, the people who have come, what I am saying is the level of intelligence of the people who have come for this, to measure these sacrifices, right? They came from Croatia, they came from Slovakia, some big professors from their universities with all kinds of instruments and cameras. But their misfortune, just to see, they are saying, they are trying to understand Vedam in this way. But Vedam doesn't accept their process. That is the difficulty. They came with the instruments and they found that there is some changes happening due to the Yagam, right? And they recorded that and they say, yes, this we are accepting now because our instruments are showing this. Now, Vedam is not interested in all these things, what you are measuring with your camera and instruments. You understand? This is not an important matter for them. The purpose of the Vedam and the sacrifice is something much more important than all these things. Right? So, but still, media and others will talk about all these things. So they have come with these cameras and these instruments and they measured all these things, right? But you have to always remember, Vedam had no interest whatsoever in all these things. What you are measuring with your camera or photographing with your camera or with the instruments. Right? The eyes have got only, what is the function of the eye in the body? To make you realize that certain things existing in this world through the eye perception, that's what happens, isn't it? That means material objects to make you aware of their existence. That's all the eyes can do. Nothing else. The eye is capable of noticing changes happening in the material nature. That's all eye does, isn't it? Because whereas these things what we are talking about in the Vedam is matters related to life after death and life before birth. This is where the difficulty is. That unless you have this proper understanding of the Vedam, where is Vedam coming from? That Vedam is saying to us very clearly that this body is not you, first thing. You are a powerful consciousness inside, and that is Krishna's part. Right? And this exists all the time. You remember, Krishna keeps on saying this. Also, Vidyadevav. Krishna is saying this. The moment you identify with your body, all your knowledge is also impure, based on the body. And this knowledge, what you are trying to achieve through camera and instruments, is all impure. That is not real knowledge. Pure knowledge is only possible when you are identifying with the soul, only in that situation. So, therefore, they say that this knowledge, what is coming from the Vedam, is based on your existence before you got this body and your existence after you leave this body. That is the topic of discussion in the Vedam. Janmandara Kadam. That how karmam has changed, given you an identity like this, this body, and when its purpose is over, that body is gone. Then you are not identifying with this body anymore, is it not? Then what is your identity then? It is that identity Vedam is talking about, not this bodily identity. Unfortunately, we, all these scientists, you can see how their mind is working. They are thinking they are that body, are they not? And they come with their camera and the instruments and measure it. And then they, whatever they have read and noticed, on based on that they are making some statements. This is where the difference between the science and the Vedic tradition. Right? So, eternity of the soul is important for the Vedam. It doesn't give any importance to the temporary nature of the body. The eternity of the soul is more important for the Vedic knowledge, or it is on that basis all this knowledge is spoken in the Vedam, that we are eternal. We are not temporary living beings in this body. We are eternal existence, consciousness we are. Right? And similarly, you also have to accept these things first, that I am eternal, I am not temporary. And similarly, I may have to accept another body like this body next day, tomorrow, when I leave this body. All these things, you got to accept it along with the Vedam. Otherwise, there is no meaning to it. It's not, you see, the problem is that we have studied everything through mind and brain and senses. And we got used to it so much that only that way you can learn things, not in any other way. This is our problem today. Everything through mind and body and the brain and the senses, and only that what is acceptable to these three entities, mind, brain and the senses. Only you will accept that. Then what can you do? Then you want to understand the soul. How is that possible? That's not possible. So, what you have to know this is that eyes, senses, mind and brain has its limitations. You will see Krishna saying this every time, is it not? Indriyani pararahu indriyebhya parammana manasastu parabuddhi yo buddhe paratastu sa. Krishna saying that buddhi, mind and indriyam, they are all very limited. But we are not able to see through these things. Even if you keep repeating this, we'll go after the scientists to say whether the scientists have accepted it or not. What meaning has it got? Scientists cannot accept it because they are in these three levels, Indriyam, Manasa and Buddhi. They have not come to the platform of the soul. And Krishna is saying that unless you are in the spiritual platform, unless you accept that you are pure consciousness, eternal living entity, existence, and similarly, you have a life after death also, you still exist. You may get another body, you may not get another body. All these things, if you accept it, then only then Vedam will make sense to anybody. Do you understand? Vedam is only makes sense to those who have this acceptance first. See, these people who are always saying that prove this to me, prove this to me. It is useless it is. How far can you keep asking this? And where will this come to an end? You will remain in that state forever. But that is where the difficulty that that I am different from this body. I have a different identity, spiritual identity, right? And that cannot be proven by camera or by the instruments. And these people are come with this camera and instruments and trying to measure that. And then after that, they will write a book, as usual. They will write a book about, and then they will market it and make some money out of it, and they're gone. And you don't see them anymore after that. This is what is going on. This is all useless, because these people who are doing this, their problem is that they can't see anything subtle beyond this body, right? So, there is a lot of things to think through. These all things you have to look at yourself impartially, without being biased by the modern way of science, scientific thinking, right? So, if you bring yukti or logic into everything in your own way, that then you won't find the answer to it. Many things in the Vedam is like that. As I said to you, I'm taking this best example, which one? Chanting the holy name. Chanting the holy name, if somebody says to you, where is the, how do you prove that if you chant the holy name, you will get liberated, or you will get out of the cycle of birth and death? Prove it to me. If somebody says, how will you do it? You can't prove it, right? There is no way of proving it the way they want it to be proven. But have they, if they had the faith in the Vedic knowledge, like Yudhishthira and Parikshit and Ambarish and Prithu and all other great personalities like that, then you can see that Vedam is saying this. What? Nama Sankirtanam, chanting the holy name. You remember in Kabilam also, who said, Devahuti says there, isn't it? You remember that verses, where she said about this holy name, chanting the holy name. So, where did this all come from? Devahuti said, Shobramarshi is saying there, Sudha Goswami is saying there, all these great personalities, they are all saying this. And we are saying, prove it to me. What does it mean? So, I'm just saying a few things like this in the Vedam. When you approach Vedam, what should be your frame of mind? If you are conditioned by this modern science and their way of thinking, you will find it very hard to understand Vedam. And that is why you have lost faith in the Vedam. Because of this. Yannamadheyam. Exactly. Yeah, that verse is, yeah. So, Devahuti is saying this, isn't it? And then Shukabrahmashi is saying that. And then in the, you will see in the Triyagam incident, Sri Parvati is saying there. What is that? About Lord Shiva's chanting the holy name. Chanting the Lord Shiva's name. Right? Forgotten the verses, you will find in the fourth canto. So do you think they are all stupid? Sri Parvati is stupid, is it? Or is Shukabrahmashi stupid? He doesn't know, he can't prove it to me, so I reject them all straight away. Is that right to do that? Devahuti is stupid, I reject her. she cannot prove it to me, so I rejected her. Shukabrahmashi cannot prove it to me, I rejected him. Sudha Goswami says something, no, I can't accept it, I rejected him. Then what's the point in studying Bhagavatam then? If this is your mental frame of, or state of mind, then there's no point in studying Bhagavatam, is there? So you have to know these things while studying Vedic literature. There are a number of things will not be proven to you today. But because they are saying, these people who are saying this are not ordinary conditioned living entities like us, who are a lot more intelligent than us. After all, Kapila Maharshi spoke to Devahuti Devi about it. When does Sri Parvati say this? Yes. After. There is. Yadvaksharam nama giri eridam nanam pavitra girtim atam alankhya shasanam bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedara. Sri Parvati is saying that if you chant the holy name, Pavitra Girtintam Alankhya Shasanam, nobody can stand against Lord Shiva's decisions, she says. Right? Bhavanaho Dveshti Shivam Shivedara. And against you, this Daksha has committed this offense. what will be his destination at the end? She says this about Lord Shiva, right? So do you think that all these statements has no meaning? So whether it is Sri Parvati or Devahuti or Sudha Goswami or Shuka Brahmarshi, whoever it is, and you remember Yamadharmaraja said to Ajamila story, the same thing. They are all authorities on spiritual life. You think they are all stupid? They all doesn't know. We are the intelligent ones. We know everything because they were not able to prove it to us what they are saying. So then we have rejected them. Then what's the point? This should not happen. That's what I am saying. We have to have not only faith in the Vedam, faith in all these personalities also, and their positions as well. Right? So, when you go into studying the power of the Holy Name, this is how you understand from the Vedam. Vedam is saying this. If you chant the Holy Name, you will get free from your sinful activities, reactions. That is guaranteed, it says. It may take long time depending on how much sinful activities we have done in several lifetimes. Depending on the intensity of the sinful reactions, it may take long time. For some people it may take less time. That depends on the person's jiva's conditioning. To what extent the jiva is conditioned. If the jiva is not very conditioned, the results can come much faster. But suppose he had a lot of anartham inside, a lot of vasanas and lot of ragadvesham, everything inside, it may take little longer time. But the remedy is not wrong. The medicine is the right medicine, chanting the Holy Name. That's how you have to understand this, right? Then, this is one thing, right? Vedam says that if you do a particular karmam here, you will be able to get a particular body after death. Vedam says like that. If you do a particular karmam here, you will get a particular body after death. And Vedam also says, if you do these kind of karmam in this world, you can go to upper planets and enjoy your life there. Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Is it not? Then Surgam, Surgalogam. How you go to Surgalogam? Urdham Gachandi Satvastam Madhyadishtandi Rajasam. All those verses you will see. So do you think Krishna is just making a statement in which, because Krishna is not able to prove it to me, so I won't accept those verses. Then what are you studying Krishna's words then? What are we studying then? Krishna is saying, if you perform certain karma in this world, you can go to higher planets, enjoy your life there. Tedam buktva surgalokam vishalam. Krishna is saying, kshine bunne martilokam vishandi. Remember? So, Tetam Bhuktva Sorgalogam Vishalam. What is he saying? That you can go to Sorgalogam, heavenly planets, and enjoy life there if you do these things here. And when that punyam, pious results are over, Martilogam Vishandi, you will come back to this world again. Krishna is saying this. This is the Vedam. This is Vedam. Krishna is saying that in the Bhagavad Gita in this way. But it is in the Vedam, this is. Now, suppose, because Krishna is not able to prove this to me, I can't accept Bhagavad Gita. Then what's the point? Why do you read Bhagavad Gita then? Throw it away. That's the best thing. You can't believe anything what is beyond our logic or beyond our mind and beyond our senses. You are not willing to accept anything. For such people, it is very difficult to make them understand because they can't understand the subtle side of the Vedam. This is the problem. Many, many things in the Vedam is like this. First thing you have to accept that I am not this body. Body is not my identity. Everything I am looking at from my bodily identity, then how can I understand anything? So first I have to come out of this bodily identity. Secondly, I do exist even after I leave this body. I may be in some other form. I don't know what that form will be. It is this science that Vedam is teaching us. Vedam is not teaching us how to go to Mars and the moon. That's not Vedam interested. Vedam is teaching us that first thing, the beginning of the Vedic knowledge is that the body is not your identity. This is somehow thrown upon me by the Prakriti. Prakriti has put this dress on me. And I had to accept it, and I'm wandering around. It's just like the tree is standing there, the body is standing here. That's all. Only thing is the body is moving around because that's the way it is created. The tree is standing there, that's all. Just like the way the tree drops one day, the body also drops one day. That's all it is from the Vedic point of view. Now all these things, if you say to me that you have to prove it to me, only then I will believe it, then nobody can help you. And it is these people who are studying Vedam and trying to understand on which day it was written. See that? This is the misfortune of that. These people who can't even understand this is the way Vedam, to study the Vedam, they are the people who come and study the Vedam and they come to their own conclusions and fix a date when Upanishads were written, when Bhagavatam was written, when Bhagavad Gita was written in this way. Right? So, now, this Sorgam Naragam, heaven and hell, right? This results is dependent on your activities here, right? Vedam says this. And the same Sorgam Naraga Varnana is in the Bhagavatam also, is it not? In the fifth canto. There is heavenly planet spoken and also hellish planet spoken, right? So, so these descriptions in the Vedam and in the Bhagavatam and all that, if you say to me that, can you show me where they are, so that I can go and verify that, only then I will accept it. Otherwise they are not right. If you take that approach, nobody will be able to show you the heavenly planets or the hellish planets. And you will reject. So that part of the fifth canto totally rejected then. Is it not? So if you look at it this way in the Bhagavatam, almost whole Bhagavatam is subject to rejection. Nothing in the Bhagavatam is acceptable. This is why the problem is, right? So, and sometimes you will find differences in describing the hellish planets and heavenly planets in the Puranams also. Some descriptions you will find different. That is because, the reason for that is that when you engage in sinful activities, and these sinful activities what we have performed, in some instances some people will have to face very heavy reactions, right? So when they explain that in the Puranam, depending on the intensity of your sinful activity, the reaction will change. So therefore, different Puranams also, when they talk about sinful reactions, they will give a little difference, different way of explaining things. That's the reason for that. Because you see, as Jiva in this world, in our human form, we all engage in sinful life. Our life is very sinful in many ways. And due to our sinful activity, sinful reaction will come, will follow. And that will vary from person to person. For example, people who are doing very high sinful activities, misleading others, and engaging in manipulating people and creating all sorts of disturbances in this world, people like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha and all that. There are people like that even today in this world, is it not? And what will be their destination? It is very difficult to precisely tell a person and prove it to him that what will be your life after death. It will be very difficult to say that. Because the type of sinful activities that person has performed will be very unique compared to many others. And therefore, what Puranams have done, in all the Puranams, when they discuss hellish planets and heavenly planets, you won't find they are not in the same way spoken. A general idea is given. That's all it is. The way it is described. So that from that you have to understand that these type of punishments exist there. Whereas we like everything spoken very precisely to us, you know. And this is our mentality, like the way we study Shastram. We study Shastram in this way, that Shastram should very clearly tell me what I should do. How can Shastram tell you very clearly what you have to do? Because your life you have created by your own karma. And your vasanas, your prarabdham, all that is not possible to take into account and able to write a Shastram for tailor-made for each individual. It's not possible for each individual. So that is where this difficulty comes, right? So, there again, the way of describing these planets, hellish planets, heavenly planets, will vary from one Puranam to another because of the changes in our own sinful activities, right? So, about creation also, what is spoken in the Puranams is not exactly similar everywhere, right? But one thing is certain, what is that? When they say that when you leave this body, the soul will go, move on, right? The soul will move on. We are now, when the Vedam says like that, you are taking it as some kind of philosophy thing, you know, not able to accept it, that there is a soul. And when I leave this body, I still exist. I will be moving on to some other existence, some level. All those things are not coming to our mind at all. We are just thinking that, oh, it is some philosophy spoken in the Vedam, and we don't take it very seriously, right? Because somehow or the other, we formed, due to our own gross nature and this gross ignorance in us, right? We start thinking, whenever Tattvajnanam is spoken, Tattvachinda or Tattvajnanam is spoken, we take it that this is all just some illusion. It has no reality in that way. This nature has come to us. When Shastram says certain things, we are not able to take it very seriously because we start thinking that it is their philosophy is like that or his philosophy is like that. In that way we learn to reject everything, right? Because as soon as you say about something life after death, right, we start thinking that, oh, how can we discuss that topic now? It is normally discussed by some grandmother or grannies at home when they talk to the children. And I can't take this very seriously. I'm a very scientific person. I can't accept all these things. This attitude has come in us. This is where the problem has started, right? So due to this problem, what has happened? Many things in the Vedam, people are not able to have any faith in anymore. This is what has happened. This is how we lost faith in the Vedam. That when we started looking at everything in the Vedam as something, oh, you are not proving it to me what you are saying. Why should I accept it? If you take that approach, then you will find it difficult to accept Vedam's authority. Right? But what you have to do in that situation is, you have to hear Vedic philosophy, Vedic knowledge from different sources and use your own intelligence to think about it and come to your own conclusions about it. As I said, that as soon as you enter into Vedic knowledge, whether it is Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam or Upanishads, whatever it may be, all of them are saying to us that body is not you. Body is not you. You are something different from the body and consciousness or whatever, and that you will continue to exist even after this body goes. And there is a life after that also. All these things when you say to people today, they are saying that where is the proof? Now what are you supposed to do with these people when they are saying like this? Proof, proof, proof. Everything they want, proof, document for that. These are not things, that is not your, it is your own problem this is, because you see how the knowledge of the Vedam was accepted for thousands, millions of years by different generations, and they lived on the strength of that. Is it not? Recent times, the Acharyas. Prior to that, the Rishis. And in this way, if you go back into the history, such a long period of time throughout the history, very intelligent people accepted Vedam. They had no problem. Today, all of us who are completely absorbed in the body and who are struggling in this life to find something to eat, that's our situation today. We think we are intelligent more than the Rishis or the Rajarshis or the Acharyas who have accepted Vedam totally. This is our misfortune. Right? So, and today, people are talking about Vedam, and because they haven't accepted this authority of the Vedam sufficiently, people are finding it difficult to accept the authority. As I mentioned before, you see, Prabhupada says to us, chant Hare Krishna. Right? Lot of devotees are saying, because Prabhupada said that, therefore it is the authority. Actually, it is not like that. Prabhupada is saying, Bhagavadam is saying this, which is Vedam, part of the Vedam. And therefore you accept it. That's what Prabhupada is saying. So we also have to develop that understanding within us. If you say, Prabhupada said this, somebody else will say, well, you accept because you are following him, therefore you are accepting that. But I'm not following him, so why should I accept that? This question will come. So, the authority of the Vedam is like this. Whether it is a acharya of the modern times or in the past times, they are all dependent on the authority of the Vedam. Authority of the Vedam. Right? So first thing to know that that Vedam is not only talking about life in this world. It is your life forever. Whereas all other things talks about life in this world. Isn't it? Vedam talks about not only your life in this world, also about life after death, what happens. So that's the way to approach Vedam. Right? So, so sometimes we say this, that you know these two things. What is that? One, vyavahariyam, vyavahara drishti. The other one is paramarthiyam. Do you understand what that difference is, right? Vyavahara drishti means those who believe only what they see through their senses, mind, and intelligence, through which you accept things. That is called Vyavahara Drishti. That means you are conditioned in that way. That you can only accept things, or your mind and intelligence will only accept things which your senses were accepting. Or, you know, what you see with your eyes, what you hear through your ears, what you taste through your tongue, what you smell through your nose, and what you touch through your sparsham, touch. They are the people, that's called Vyavahara Drishti. That means you are conducting your life in this world through the senses and the mind. So this is called Vyavahara Drishti. Vyavahara Drishti means this. Paramarthika Drishti means that you have gone above this. You accepted that what I am doing in this world is only through the body, mind and senses. I am something more than this. Those who have come to that understanding, they have got paramarthika drishti. So this drishti means your vision, depends on these two things. If somebody is only in the vyavahara drishti, he will find it very hard to rise up to the knowledge of the Vedam. It will be difficult for him, because his drishti is vyavahariyam. But one who has developed paramarthika drishti, he will know when something is spoken from the Vedam, he will think about it. little bit, he will think that he won't outrightly reject. The problem with all these big men, I'm not talking about the scientists and all that, who are completely rejecting the Vedam, is they lack this paramarthika drishti. They only have vyavahara drishti. Vyavahara drishti means that they can only see things through the senses and the mind and intelligence, and that's all, they can accept it. Nothing more than that. So, paramarthika drishti and vyavaharika drishti, they are two different things, right? So, so when we talk about these things, right, when we talk about these things, you should have the intelligence to discriminate things properly. What is vyavaharika drishti and what is paramarthika drishti? You have to have that. Don't reject it as though it's a philosophy. It's not just a philosophy. There are so many philosophies in this world. This is not a philosophy. This is what they call, in Shastram they call it as paramarthika drishti. What that means is that if you perform, we are talking about kalpam now, all this is because of kalpam. Kalpam is saying, lot of karmam is spoken in the kalpam, based on the Vedam, right? Those kalpam, whatever yagadi karmam, what is spoken there, it has got its results. And when you read those results, what will come from performing those sacrifices, right, you may find it very difficult to accept it because of your vyavahara drishti, right? You will say, who knows all these things are correct or not, what is spoken in the Vedam, right? This is the reason, you remember, in the 5th canto, in the 11th chapter, the first verse if you look, Jadabharata said to Rahugana, one verse, Tato Amarshena Sahamanandi, he says, Akovida Kovida Vada Vadan. If you look at that verse, you will see the beauty, how he started speaking to Rahugana. Rahugana, your problem is this, that you are not seeing the things the way I am seeing things. This was Bharata's statement. Bharata Yogeshwara, Jadabharata, Brahmana, whatever you call him. What did he say to Rahugana? Rahugana, you are seeing things in your way. I am seeing things in a different way. And intelligent person, they won't mix these two things together. Do you get the point, what he is saying? Akovida kovida vada vadan. That verse begins like that. Tattvava marshena sahamanandi. What does that mean? In one verse, Jadabharata completely destroyed Rahugana's argument. He says to Rahugana, you have not even developed the proper vision in you, how to see things properly. You are seeing things from your way. And you think that everybody should be looking at it that way. That's your problem, not my problem, he said. Akovida kovida vada vadan. What was the next line? Varishtam. Then? Vyavaharamenam tattvamarshena sahamanandi. People who are doing vyavaharam, they won't understand this, he said. They cannot understand. Tattvava marshena sahamanandi. Tattvajnanam is for those people who have developed that higher way of looking at things. So till we develop this, Vedam also is not accessible to us. We find it difficult, many things what is spoken in the Vedam. So, here, Baudhiyam. Baudhiyam means materialistic way, materialism or materialistic mind, materialistic vision, materialistic nature. All this is called Baudhiyam. For such people, it is very hard for them to understand Tattvam and Tattvajnanam. That is what Bharata Yogeshwara is saying to him, right? Because in material science, you know, like in the chemistry laboratory, that if you mix certain chemicals, certain results will come from that, reaction will happen. That way you can prove it, right? That means cause and effect. If you do certain thing, these results will come. That's how you prove it in the chemistry laboratory, isn't it? Or in other reactions also, chemical reactions and all that. In the same way, on spiritual side also, there is a cause and effect. Karyakaranabandham. That you do certain things, you will get certain reactions from that. And because it is subtle compared to the chemical reaction, what you are studying in this laboratory, the person who is used to seeing everything through chemical laboratory, he will find it very hard to understand the subtle reaction between your karma and the effect of the karma. That is what he is saying there. Therefore, the one who is used to this vision of materialistic way of thinking should not mix his way in bring it into spiritual side. That is that first word saying, akovida kovida vada vadan, he says. One who has no knowledge of spiritual life and spiritual existence and spiritual activities, it is no point in telling him about the reaction of karma and after effect of the karma. He won't understand because he is conditioned in a particular way to look at things, right? So therefore, the bhaudiyam means this material reactions, action reaction, is all drishtam. Drishtam means you can see them. All the things related to karyakarana bandham or the reaction of karmam and its effect is all adrishtam. That's the difference. One, you see the differences in material life. Whatever you have saying or doing, due to your conditioning, you can also see the results of your own actions in this world. But in spiritual life, it's all adrishtam. Adrishtam means it cannot be seen by anything. So, that effect or cause and effect, karyam, karanam. Karyam is the result, karanam is the cause. This cause and effect, when it comes to spiritual life and life after death, what happens to us, all these things, if you want to know that, that science is called in the Vedam as dharma. Do you understand now what dharma means? You see, in this world now, we certain things you can understand by studying books, by performing some experiments, reactions and all that. You can conclude certain things from that way. That is within your within the purview of your senses, within that, and your mind and your intelligence. But how will you understand the same thing in relationship with your own karma? So whatever karma you perform here, how it will all come out later on, in what form it will impact on me, that means karma decides your next body, for example. So there itself you can see the power of karma. Karma, what you do today will have an impact on your next body, definitely. Your vasanas, what it is karma has created in you, all those things is going to follow you later on, next life or life after that, in this way. So karma is constantly accompanying us all the time. But karma and its effect you cannot know, like the way you know in your scientific laboratory. So that you can only know through dharma. And that science which explains the karma and its after effect is called dharma. Do you understand now? Like everything, it is subtle things. So that is why all these things looks to us unknown factor. So therefore, dharma is for this purpose. To understand that I have performed a lot of activities in this world, how it is going to affect me in future, and what is the effect of things what I may or may not have done in my previous lifetimes, what is its impact on me. If I had to understand all these things, that science is called the dharma. So, and they are saying that if you do a particular karma, you will get this result. Vedam says like that, right? If you do it in this way, your papam, sinful reactions, will be destroyed, right? So, if you say all these things, how does people receive that? Normal people? What will they say? They will say, well, where is the proof? This will be the first answer. It's no point in saying to them anything, because first of all, they have to change their way of thinking. That's what I'm saying here. That they will say that first thing, suppose you have done something very sinful, right? Now, who knows that there is a reaction for that, they will ask. Suppose I kill somebody. And I feel that guilty about it, I've done. But somebody says to me, why you worry? Who said there is a reaction for killing someone? You can take that approach also, isn't it? So, in order to understand that the reaction, there is a reaction for sinful activity, even that knowledge you have to get from the Veda. This is how much we are dependent on the Veda. If I don't have any knowledge from the Veda, I can always say that there is no sinful reaction. Who says there is a reaction? I kill some, or I beat up somebody, or I abused somebody, or I acted very violently to someone, and I just take it that there's nothing wrong, I've done what I want. But if you have a little bit of understanding from the Veda, you know that there will be a reaction to it. It will come back to me, isn't it? The loss of karma. Even that knowledge has to come from the Veda. Has to come from the Veda, right? So, if you do a good thing, you will get better results in next life. Or you will elevate yourself in your position, right? Or if you do sinful things, you will degrade yourself. Even this knowledge, you have to get from the Veda. Where else will you get it? All this knowledge has gone from the Veda to other scriptures also. Whether it is Bible or Quran or anything, all other scriptures also, the original understanding has come from the Veda, that sinful activities, pious activities, it will have its results. That all this has come from the Veda. That is the way, that's what I'm saying. Veda is behind everything as a powerful wall built. From there, this knowledge was continuously delivered by different people at different times in different languages and different parts of the world. It became popular. But you will see a thread here, connection, that sinful reactions from sinful activities, pious results from pious activities. Where did this concept come from? It came from the Veda. Came from the Veda. So, now, Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So, he's saying there that by chanting the holy name, you will get free from all your sinful reactions. Who's saying? Vedavyasa is saying that, isn't it? So, but these two things, which one? Chanting the holy name and getting free from sinful reactions. This is not in our direct experience, isn't it? We don't know. We are chanting because Prabhupada said you chant, we are chanting. Or GBC said something. We are chanting. But where is the proof if you ask? There's no proof, is there? No proof to show, right? So, there the question comes. When you read Bhagavatam, when you read that statement, right, you say that I cannot accept it because there is no proof, right? Then the answer for that is, who gave you the authority to say that there is no benefit from that? That's the counter argument towards this. You are saying that, he is telling me that there is no proof for this, so I am not accepting that. So I am asking him that who tells you, on what authority do you say that there is no benefit by chanting the holy name, right? So there what you have to understand is, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Think about that. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. This is the approach from the Vedam. From the Vedam side, when you think, it is like that. You may not have any evidence. That is not an evidence of absence. Right? Just because there is no direct proof for anything, it doesn't mean that it is not valid. Right? Right? So, so that is what is called pratyaksham. Pratyaksham means direct result. Right? So, because it is not direct result, right, if you keep saying that there is no sinful reaction and there is no pious results either, because there is nothing direct perception, you can't experience that. Right? And there, if you reject that, what will be the condition in this world if you take that approach? Suppose I am told that there is no reaction to anything. You just do what you want and nobody can, you don't have to be fearful about anything. If you take that approach, you can do anything you like in this world, and because you're not frightened about any after effect. Why people refrain from doing sinful things? Because of the fear that it will cause problems later, isn't it? That's why we frightened about these sinful reactions. Even though we have not seen anything, still there is a fear inside about death, right? So, so purely based on your experience alone, it will be very difficult to convince the whole world. Purely based on the experience. You can't tell the whole people in this world, they are not going to accept it. Purely on the experience. Because if you take this approach, I'm saying, that unless you are able to prove everything, on that understanding, if you take to many things in Krishna consciousness also, or spiritual life, it won't be possible to make the world understand the importance, right? So, who has that? That Vedam is saying that if you do a particular thing, this reaction will come from that. And that is spoken in the Brahmanam. Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. So the Brahmanam in the Vedam cover this aspect of the Vedam. And in there is very complex karma is spoken in these Brahmanams. Right? So, all this is false. Suppose somebody says, oh, this is all false. Everything that is written in the Vedam is false. Or you cannot accept it as an authority, right? Or you can say this is somebody who has rishis who have written it according to his own whims, whatever he has written. And then you will come to this understanding that Vedam is not bona fide then. If you take this, if you say that one thing that, you know, the people, how they reject things, I'm saying. They reject the authority of the Vedam on these grounds. What they say is that they will say some old rishi has written all these things according to his mind and intelligence. He has written down all these things, right? And also you can say that there's no proof for all these things is correct or not. But when you read that, which one? This Vedic Yagam, or the description of that Yajnam, what is discussed in the Vedam, right? The karmam that is spoken in that is extremely complex, right? Extremely complex. If you read through all that, and that's why that book Agni does give you some understanding in English about it, how complex this whole karmam. Can you imagine a man sitting down and to write all these things to mislead the world? To do it like that, right? So, these normally in the Shastram. You know, in Vedam they have discussed all these things, that they knew that people will find a lot of difficulty in accepting the authority of the Vedam. So what they have done, they have also discussed what is bona fide and what is not bona fide. How do you accept something as an authority and not an authority? These things are also discussed in the Vedam. So there they will say that pramanyam means authority, is given to something, or not authority, in three different ways. They decide that, right? For example, if your authority is contradicting something else from the Vedam, another statement in the Vedam, one pramanam is opposing another pramanam in the Vedam, then there is a problem. Then secondly, after accepting that statement, pramanam, then it is not giving you a proper understanding of the result, arthabodham. That means you should have a very clear understanding of the reaction of your activity, secondly. And thirdly, you are not getting any meaning, sense out of it. In all these situations, you can reject it. Number one, that you are not, the pramanam what you have accepted from the Vedam is contradicting another pramanam from the Vedam. Number one. Number two, after getting that pramanam, it's not giving you total clarity of the thing. That means a karmam you perform in a particular way, what is spoken there. And if it is performed exactly like that, the way it is spoken, then the results that is spoken from that is also very clear what you will get from that. If there is no contradiction in that and there is total clarity there, then it is fine. If you have no clarity there, then you can reject it. It is a pramanyam. And thirdly, that you are not getting any kind of clarity, arthabodham, from the whole thing, right? For example, I am saying so many things now, this morning particularly. I have spoken so many things, right? And from this, all these things what I have spoken, if in your own mind, if you have been captured some message, serious message, you can say that, isn't it? You can say, I didn't understand what you are talking about whole morning. You have spoken a lot of things. It's not making any sense to me. If you say like that, then you can reject everything, if it has not made any sense. But that means that you are trying very hard to understand what I was saying, but you are not able to get any clarity from that. You are all getting confused about it, or it's not making any sense to you. In this way, if your mind is giving that impression inside, then you'll have to reject it, right? So, but situations where, which cannot be directly proven, pratyaksham, right? For example, this is a book here, right? Suppose I say this is a pot instead of a book, right? You can immediately say, I'm telling something wrong. It's false, it is, right? Similarly, in the Vedam, all this karma side of it, karma vidhi, or instructions of the karma, right? And lots of it, not one or two, hundreds of them spoken there, right? And it will say that if you perform these things, say for example Sandhyavandanam, if you do Sandhyavandanam, what the benefit is? If you don't perform Sandhyavandanam, what will be the result of that? All these things are spoken in the Vedam, right? Similarly, there is so many other names also. Dashapurnamasam, there is one. And it says if you perform Dashapurnamasam, it's a kind of a ishti. Ishti means, you know, brick. Brick is called ishtiya. So, Dashapurnamasam is a ishti. Ishti means where you use the bricks and break the yaga homakundam. You made from that. So, when you do that, they say there, then after the death, if you perform the Shavurnamasam, you will get certain results. It's spoken in the Vedam, right? Similarly, in the Bhagavatam, it says if you chant the holy name, your sinful reactions will be destroyed, right? So, these statements, once somebody says this, right? If somebody says, oh, this is not correct, what you are saying, where is the proof for that? That is because this cause and effect thing. Cause and effect. That means, I have spoken that if you do these things, you will get the result, right? Karanam I have spoken, but karyam is not shown. It's not shown, right? So, that means if you do this, this will happen. And if you don't do this, this won't happen, right? This is called karya karana bhava. Karya karana means cause and effect, basically, right? So, when this karya karana bhavam in material life and spiritual life is different. In material life, you know, karya karana bhavam is easy to explain because everything in material life you are acquiring through senses, mind and the intelligence. Like for example, I say to you, in the very extreme cold weather, don't go out without a jacket, or don't cover your head, or use some shawl, or keep yourself warm before you go out. And you didn't care, you went out. And I'm telling you that you will catch cold, and you got cold. So that means my statement, before you went out, is correct. That I told you, if you go out without proper clothing, you will catch cold, and you got cold. This approach, it's not possible to bring it into spiritual life till you develop certain faith in the Vedam. That means what he is saying here is that all the pramanam or authority in the Vedam is that you chant the holy name, all your sinful reactions will be destroyed, right? And somebody will say, oh, I can't accept that because there is no proof. Whereas covering yourself with proper clothing and catching cold, you can directly experience here. Whereas chanting the holy name and the results and your sinful reactions getting destroyed, you are not able to prove it in any way. So you see the problem? So karya karana bandham in material life and spiritual life is different. Vedam will tell us only these things. What is related to the spiritual side. It won't tell you about the material life what happens. Right? So from the Vedam point of view, somebody says to us that even by chanting the holy name, your sinful reactions won't be destroyed. Right? So answer for that is, where is the proof that it will not get destroyed? That's the answer for that. Because you have to remember, that person who is asking this question, he is looking at life in a different way. In which way? He is thinking that somebody is suffering in this world and somebody is enjoying in this world. The person who is suffering in this world, why is he suffering? He is able to think that much, that far he is able to think. But he doesn't know the reason behind it. Yeah? That means he has got this knowledge. He is able to accept that this person must have done something which has resulted in this reaction for him. That common sense is telling him. Otherwise, why two people are not getting the same result in life? Somebody suffers heavily in life for some reason. Somebody is not having so much problem in life. So he is looking at these two and saying that there must be something behind it what has caused this situation to happen. So that means the reaction of your good karma and bad karma is already accepting that. So Vedam is saying to us that it is due to karmam that this is happening. Pabam punyam. Right? So pabam and punyam, he is connected with karma. Karmam. Karmam decides that whether it is pabam or punyam. And if it is pabam, sufferings will come. If it is punyam, happiness will come. Right? So you are accepting that part of it, that karmam part of it. even without referring to Vedam. Because you are seeing that in this world. Somebody suffering and somebody enjoying. And then you are thinking, why is it like this? But you are not accepting the result of your karma. You are not able to connect that with the result of your action. That's what is happening there. He is accepting that somebody is suffering and somebody is enjoying in this world. And he is seeing that, why is it so? The only conclusion from the Vedam is telling us, it is due to karma. And he is saying there that, and the same Vedam is telling us, if you chant the holy name, this reaction of the karma will go. You will get free from that. And therefore, when somebody says to you, where is the proof for that? The answer for that is, that on what authority do you say it will not get destroyed, your sinful reactions? That's the answer for that. Right? Where is the proof for that? You can't take certain things from the Vedam and reject something else in the Vedam. That's not possible. So the destruction of our sinful reactions, that is not directly visible for us, isn't it? So then he might say, then if my sinful reactions are getting destroyed, then I should not see any more distress in his life if all the sinful reactions are destroyed, right? So therefore, his sinful reactions are not destroyed by chanting the holy name. Therefore, all that you're chanting the holy name has not helped. It was all a waste of time. Somebody says like that. No. Why? Because when Vedam says like this, that by chanting the holy name is destroying your sinful reactions, what he is saying is, it is, if you look at that verse carefully, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Bhava Pranashanam. Right? That means Sarva Bhava Pranashanam. If you chant the holy name, the sinful reactions will get destroyed. That's all it is saying. Right? That means Bhagavatam is not saying, Bhagavatam is not saying that if you chant the holy name, after that, all your life will be blissful, whole life, rest of the life. It's not saying that. Right? You will still get distress after that. Even after chanting the holy name, you will still get distress. Right? So, and normally that's what you find in the Bhagavatam. Even after chanting the holy name, they are still getting distress. Right? So, these are the instances that when people are looking everything based on this current life in this world, this is where this question comes. If you are looking at yourself of your very little life, 78 years in this world, only take that as your life, nothing else, and you apply this principle there, you will still see whole life you may have chanted the holy name. But you are still suffering in life here. And then the question will come that you told me that by chanting the holy name you will get free from all distress. Why it's not happening? You can ask that question. And that question is valid. But the answer for that is this. Do not look at the life simply based on this body and this short period of time in this world. You have to come out of that box. And that is where our problem is mostly. From the Vedam point of view, they are not only talking to you about this one life in this one body. They are looking at you as a spiritual entity. And this body has come in that long journey as one of the many bodies what you are going to take. In your long life, this is one dress what you have got for a certain period of time. And do not bring everything into this one dress and one body, one life, and start applying and looking for the results there. It won't work. This is spoken for a soul who wants never to accept any more bodies. So you have to think like this. that even though you may have chanted whole lifetime, all what it has helped is, in your account there, a lot of it has gone from that. But you don't know how much you have done in several lifetimes. Till the whole thing is emptied, there is no possibility of escaping from the whole thing. Suppose sometimes you can see, whole life you have chanted, you died and left this world. And people will make this comment, he wasted all his lifetime. Instead of enjoying life, he chanted this Hare Krishna and wasted his whole life and gone from this world. He didn't gain anything from this life. People say like that, don't they? They say that, many people say like this. They are saying that whole life he was wasted time chanting Hare Krishna. And then what did he gain from this life? He didn't even enjoy his life. He didn't make money, he didn't gratify his senses. Nothing happened. He left this world and gone. Now, what we don't know is that person, him chanting the holy name, what was its effect on his account, spiritual account? That you won't know from this life. That is not possible to judge based on this life. This is why you need to understand Vedam in the proper way, the knowledge in the Vedam, right? So, and you will see, nowhere in the Bhagavatam it says that after you chant the holy name, you won't have any more distress. It's not spoken anywhere in the Bhagavatam that if you chant the holy name, you won't have any more distress after that. What Bhagavatam is saying, if you chant the holy name, your account will get purified. That means you will get a lot of your distress. Pava sarva bhava pranashanam, pranamo dukkha shamanam. That's all it's saying. It's not saying that if you chant the holy name, after that, you won't have any more distress. Because it is connected with your account, what you have accumulated in several lifetimes. Right? So, and sometimes you see, people were chanting the holy name, and they were still given distress. Krishna has given them distress still. Right? And that is what you find in the Bhagavatam sometimes. So, but because of that, you can't say the whole thing is wrong. Just like this Jyotishtomam, one of the sacrifices, if you do that, it says that in Urdhulogam, in higher planets, you will get punyam, benefit from that, right? And if you ask a question that, oh, have you seen it? Anybody, have you gone and seen? First of all, people don't even believe that there is a higher existence, right? Higher planets and lower planets and all. People don't believe in all these things anymore. So, what you have to remember here is that all these things is based on the pramanam of Vedam. Vedam says it is like this. You have to accept it on that basis, right? So, and there is no another pramanam to prove that it is not like that. Do you understand the logic now? Vedam says, if you do these things, these results will come after death. These are the results from that. So that means Vedam is the pramanam for that, authority for that. It is not like this. Have you got any pramanam for that? You don't have. Have you? Nobody has it. So, therefore, any argument like that has to be rejected. Has to be rejected, right? So, it is like this. It's easy to understand this. I say I'm looking at this picture, Prabhupada's photograph there, right? And I can see the reddish color, the garland, red garland, and the saffron color, the dhoti and everything, right? Because I've got eye, I can see that. But with the ear, I can't feel anything. Suppose I don't have eye. With the ear, if I want to understand that, I can't. So the same thing, with one sense you can understand, with another sense you can't. Is it not? So in the same way, so because this photograph is not perceived by the ear, right? Can you say that it's not an authority for the eye? For the eye it is acceptable, because it is possible to perceive that with the eye. For the ear it is not acceptable, because ear cannot perceive it. That's all it is. In the same way, right? So, therefore, what you have to understand is this, that it is called pramana andara virodham. That means two pramanams existing, one pramanam is opposing the another pramanam. Like here, the ear is one pramanam, eye is one pramanam. So, ear pramanam is opposing the pramanam of the eye. Eye is saying it is reddish color. The ear cannot understand it. Ear is saying, I don't know what it is. I can't accept you, what you are saying. Ear is saying to the eye. So, this contradiction between two senses is called pramanandara virodha. Two pramanam objecting each other. In a similar way, so, pramanam or the authority in the Vedam is like this. That Vedam is saying something, you have to prove that it is not like that from some other pramanam. But you don't have any pramanam that it is not like that. So therefore, you have to accept this pramanam. This is one thing, right? So, the kind of things the historians have written about Vedam, that is what important to know. They are saying that all these Vedic hymns, they were written by people who have some particular time during the history, they were residing in the river bank, Sindhu River, right? And they had nothing else to do. They migrated from somewhere else, they had come there, right? And all that they have written down is some of the songs, what they felt like singing when they had nothing else to do. That's some of the historians have come to this conclusion about the Vedam. They are saying that Vedam is some of the songs who the migrated people who came from somewhere else to Sindhu River bank, and they because in their leisure time they were not doing anything, because they were not very organized like us today. They were not going to factory at 7 in the morning, coming home at 7 in the evening, like we, the perfect society, like the way we are. So therefore, these people, these historians are thinking, because they had nothing else to do, they were not making any economic development, so they had a lot of leisure time, so they wrote some songs, were sitting to sing in the leisure time to enjoy, and these are those songs, Vedam. This is what their understanding is, right? So, in this way, that they say that all the Vedam is, they call it a certain kalpana from their mind, right? So, when you take it like that, when they make these statements, right, you have to look at it a little careful about this. When you listen to these kind of statements, right? If you look at the Vedam, this Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad, how nicely they are structured in there itself, right? So, all the Brahmanam, if you take, which is studied by the householder, that is where all the karmam is discussed. Yeah? All the karmam side of it, that means where all the sacrifices, yajnam, all the Yajurvedam, all that is mostly this karma side of it, which is all referred to kalpam, is discussed in there, right? And this karmam is only spoken in the Brahmanam, not in the Mantram, Samhita. In the Samhita it is not spoken, it's all spoken in the Brahmanam, right? And that is also like a stuti it is. Glorifications, right? So, so when you evaluate these things, you have to look at it very carefully and see this, that all the Brahmanam statements, if you look at it, you will see that all the karma vidhi comes in the Brahmanam, also studi rubam comes in the Mantram, right? All the studi is in the Mantram. You know these people who are these historians and all, they haven't got a clue about anything. all they knew is that they just read it and asked for the English translation. And they read the translation. It was not making any head and tail to them. And they gave their report on that, saying that all these were some songs written by some old people who had nothing else to do. In this way. So, when you very closely study this Mandram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad, you see the way it is structured. That all the stuti glorifications are all in the Samhita, Mandram. All the karmam side of it, where you have to execute the yagam, the action side of it, is all in the Brahmanam. In the Brahmanam. You see? So who do you think that they have just written some songs like this? Can you imagine that? To make a statement like this. So people are such, these modern people, historians and modern some of these people who write these things, they are so daft in these things that they are not able to, when you look at the Brahmana Vakyam or Brahmana hymns, right, lot of karma vidhi is spoken, one after the other. And it says there, if you do this, this will be the result. And lot of things mentioned there, right, which is related to karma. Only purely related to karma and its result. Now, imagine the people who wrote all these things, right? They knew one thing. What was that? Very important thing this is. That everyone in this world, who have come to this world, is not looking for liberation. Do you understand? Yeah? Majority of the people are not interested in liberation or anything. Is that not true? If you look at the world outside, who is interested in liberation? Hardly anybody, isn't it? Even those who are interested. In liberation, right? That is not their plan. They have come here to enjoy life in this body. That is their goal of life at the moment. And you can't ask that person, look, you should be thinking about liberation. He is not going to change. He has come here with this goal to enjoy life. So that's what we are saying. Everyone who comes here is not a mumukshu. Mumukshu means one who wants liberation. Right? So, for them who wants to live in this world and enjoy life here, it is for them all the karma is spoken in the Veda. Rishis did not write all these things, just some songs to sing. They had put a lot of thoughts behind it. And they are saying here that those who wants to live here, because they knew us very well, everybody won't be interested in liberation. How many people? You go and tell the Prime Minister that about liberation. Will he be interested? He's interested about getting his Brexit through the Parliament. That's his main worry today. Or somebody else for that matter, isn't it? Or American President or anybody for that matter. All these big, big leaders, I'm saying. Are they not interested in liberation or anything? You can see from their attitude in life. What they're interested is, they've come here, some of them enjoy power, some of them enjoy the wealth, some of them enjoy sense gratification in different ways. And this is all sense gratification. Acquiring wealth, acquiring position, and controlling others. All this is authority, all this is sense gratification. So they have come with that vasana in them, and you tell them about liberation, they are not be interested, whether it is Trump or Putin or anybody. It's not going to make any difference. They have come with that idea in their head, and that's what they want in life. And so rishis knew this, that people in this world, everybody won't be interested in liberation. So what did they do? If it is like that, what should we do? At least those people who are want some sense gratification, give them a proper way to live in this world without getting into trouble. And that is what Karmagandam is all about. Karmagandam, if you look into it, what it will tell you is how to conduct your life in a proper way based on the Vedam, so that you will not get entangled in life And at the same time, and if you follow those, and that is how all these sacrifices are spoken. That means if you perform those sacrifices, lot of your desires will get fulfilled at the same time. Eventually you will get purified in that process. And you won't have sinful reactions from that. Suppose I have to do karmam. Is it not better to do a karmam which will not cause any problems later, rather than doing a karmam which will entangle me for many lifetimes? So rishis understood this principle. And so therefore what did they do? If you are a king, or if you want to be a king, you are in a powerful position, engage in sacrifices. And that is how all the sacrifices, Rajasuyam, Ashwamedham, all these things were spoken in the Shastra. By doing that, those rishis, you will see this, particularly in Prajina Barhi's case, what happened? He had no idea of going back home, back to Godhead or anything like that in his head. His sons are the Prajetas, the 10 sons together. So Prajina Barhi's, he has no clue. He performed so many sacrifices. That's how he got the name Prajina Barhis. Barhishat is his name. Prajina means that towards eastern side, you spread the dharba grass and sit there and perform the sacrifices. And his whole lifetime he performed these sacrifices. He didn't have much interest in the spiritual world, Vaikuntham, Kailasam or Golokam or anything like that. But he had faith in the Vedam. That is his good fortune. Because he had faith in the Vedam, what did he do? He followed the Vaidika karma. Karma is difficult to get rid of. It is there in him. Karma vasana. So what did he do? He decided to do this karma, sacrifice one after the other for the whole life. He did that. And then he told his children, Prajetas, that you go to forest to perform penances, and then come back and take over the administration. That's when Narada Maharshi told them to engage in austerities and penances, and told him also that the goal of life is not this, performing sacrifices, everything. But due to performing sacrifices only, he got purified, because his karma was not vikarma. Do you understand? Prajina Barhi's karmam was not vigarmam. Our karmam is all vigarmam. That is the difference. Because he performed no vigarmam, therefore Krishna sent him, Srinarada Maharshi, to instruct him properly. That is because of that. Because he didn't perform vigarmam. If you perform vigarmam, the result will be you will be entangled in the karmam, science of, in the laws of karmam. And that means, that's what has created this body. So therefore what happened to Prajina Barhis? Srinarada Maharshi spoke to him, and then the story of Puranjanobakhyanam in the fourth canto, you remember? Five chapters, 28 to 33, is all about this. Srinarada Maharshi's instructions to Prajina Barhis about yagam, the purpose of yagam, and how one has to. And then after Narada Maharshi's instructions, Prajina Barhis goes to the forest, leaving everything, and going back to spiritual world. That is due to this reason. That's how you have to understand where this karmakandam comes in. So if you stick to karmakandam, there is a benefit. What is that? You don't get entangled in karma. You will purify. You will get purified eventually. And then you will get the higher knowledge from Krishna's arrangement. Somebody will instruct you on the higher, about liberation and about going back to spiritual world and all that, and self-realization, and you will escape from this cycle. So that benefit is there in the karmakanda. So therefore, there is a good thing there. At least if you follow karmakanda, there is no chance of going to the hellish planet. You won't go into the hellish planet. But there's one problem. You will still be in the material existence. If you perform karmakandam properly, then what will happen is that that you can live your life in this world nicely, But you won't get out of the cycle of birth and death. Material existence will continue. You understand? Material existence will continue. We'll continue after a few minutes.
ఆనందం బుద్ధివర్ధనం ప్రతిపదం పూర్ణామృతస్వాదనం సర్వాత్మాశుభనం ధనం విజయదే శ్రీకృష్ణ సంకీర్తనం నానామదారి బహుదానిజ సర్వశక్తి స్మరణేన కారా ఏదాదృశీ తవ కృపా భగవన్ మమాభిహాజరినానురాగాహం తృణారవీషు నీచేనారవీ సహీశ్వర గిరా సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం
గోవింద గోవింద.
సో దోస్ హూ హావ్ నో డిజైర్ ఫర్ లిబరేషన్ అండ్ దో వాంట్ టు హావ్ ఎ గుడ్ లైఫ్ హియర్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ఫర్ దెమ్ కర్మకాండం. ఇట్ ఈస్ ఫర్ దెమ్ ద కర్మకాండం దట్ మీన్స్ దట్ దే హావ్ They are not interested to liberation or anything. They come here with the different ideas in their mind according to their own vasanas, right? So, and if you perform that karma gandam, the benefit is that you are not performing the karmam then. There is no sinful reactions from that, right? But the only problem is you will still stay here. You won't escape from here. You are still in the material existence, which means cycle of birth and death, you can't get out of it by performing this karma gandam. You will, karma gandam will do that. That means you perform the karma, what is spoken in the Vedam. The benefit is you won't do any vikarma. That means you won't get any sinful reactions from that. But at the same time, you won't get free from the material life existence. That is the disadvantage. That is to show that Prajina Karmis, Prajina Barhishad story in the fourth canto, right? So, the good thing is that you can continue with your material existence. Again, come back here, get another body, live another life. And then, if you follow Karmagandam again, you will leave this body, go to heavenly planets, enjoy some time and come back here again. You have to get out of going to heavenly planets also, only then you are free from material existence. Cycle of birth and death means not only in this world, these three planetary systems, higher, middle and the lower planetary systems, as long as you are rotating within these three, you are in material existence. That's what you have to remember. Till you get free from all the three planets positions, that means upper planets, lower planets and middle planetaries. Middle planetaries is the earthly planet. Lower planets are the Padalam, Adholokam, what they call it, Adalam, Vidalam, Sudalam, Thaladalam, Rasadalam, Padalam, where Prahlada went there, isn't it? Prahlada went to Sudalam, and then Mahabali went there. So, these places are also, there is happiness in that places also. And similarly, heavenly Bhuvalokam, Surlokam, all those, there is also happiness there. But you will be rotating within these three, and then the earthly planet, where there is both papam, punyam, everything, karmam. So here you perform karmam, and results, if the pious results are high, you go to heaven, enjoy there, but then you come back here again, and then again come back to karmam again. Or you go to the lower planets, enjoy there in their way, and then come back here. So whichever way, whatever it is, right? So, and this, but you won't go to hellish planets because of this. Who goes to hellish planets then? Who performs Vikarma? That's the one who will have to go to hellish planets. So, hell is for them. You know what I'm saying? That hell is for those people who are completely stepped out of the Vedam and who have made their life based on the modern methods, right? So, that is called Vikarmam or Nishiddha Karmam. Another word for that is Nishiddha, forbidden ones, right? And this is spoken very clearly in the fifth canto. Fifth canto will say this, right? Because Yagam, Homam, Yajnam and all that, at the end of this world, it can only give you Punyam, pious results, and you can elevate yourself to higher planets and then come back. So, Rishis have spoken about this, and then that's why in the fifth canto you see all the talked about hellish planets also. And the benefit of performing and going to the higher planets also spoken there in the fifth canto. Right. So here, how did the rishis find out these things? They are the ones who are told us all these things. Is it not? How did they find out all these things? Right? See, for example, for us to write a book, right? Either, suppose you want to write a book, either you have to see certain things and based on that you can write a book, based on your perception of the world, right? So that means, without any, so what happens now, say I saw some incident or a war happening over 5 years or so, war was going on, and I was witnessing this war happening. Then what will happen? I can write after 5 years a book about that war, say Second World War, Battle of Britain and all that. You can write books about that, isn't it? Why? A lot of people have witnessed that experience of the war, and the books have come out after that about it, right? So in the same way, did the rishis who have wrote all these Vedam, who have put it in the format to us, have they seen all these things and after that did they write it in this book form? That question will come. Because Vedam existed all the time. The rishis received this knowledge and they have spoken in the Upanishads and in the Puranams and Mahabharatam and everywhere. This knowledge they have put it down. Does that mean? Has the rishis seen everything and after that they wrote? You see, from an example, our own example, we write a book. When do you write a book? After you had some experience of this world. Based on your experience, you write that book, isn't it? Otherwise, you can write fiction. But history is always based on the evidence what you have got or the what you have read and others have spoken like that, right? So, then, but if you say that rishis have experienced everything, and after they wrote this book, then, if it is like that, how did they experience all these things? That question will come. Isn't it? When did they experience? How did they get to know all these things about the heavenly planets, hellish planets, and the reaction due to karma, what happens? How did they find out all these things? That question will naturally come, right? So, one answer is that through the, normally you will say is yoga siddhi. They have the yogic power and they acquire the siddhis, perfectional power of knowing about these things, right? Then the question will come, how did they get this yoga siddhi? Why the rishis had this yoga siddhi, right? So, the answer for that they may say that because they performed the yoga processes properly, and due to their extremely good sadhana, what they have done, right? And they acquired the siddhi. And that is how they wrote all these books. So then you can ask the question, how did they know that if I perform this sadhana, I will get this siddhi? How did they know that? Where did they get that knowledge from? Right? So, because before you do a sadhana, any sadhana, you have to know that if I do this sadhana, I will get this result, isn't it? That's how you start doing the sadhana. Say, for example, you're chanting Hare Krishna. For what? You chant Hare Krishna hoping that one day I don't have to accept another birth, isn't it? I get this understanding from learned people or from the Shastram. It's on that authority I'm doing this. So I don't know, I have not gone through this process yet. I'm chanting on the understanding that learned people are telling us who know Shastram. Shastram also, when I look at, is telling the same thing. So on the authority of the Shastram and on the authority of the realized souls or great personalities, I'm doing it now on that authority. So, but where did the rishis get this from? Where did they get this idea from? Right? You can't say that it just happened in their mind like that, or in their thoughts it came out like that. Right? Then you can say, in that case, maybe their guru must have told them. Particular yogi, rishi. They also had gurus, their own gurus. So guru might have told them. Then the question was, where did guru get it from? This way it will go, right? So in this way, if you keep going back to all these inquiries, right, ultimately you get to Vedam. Vedam finishes. It is from the Vedam everything has come, right? So, and if you get to Vedam, from Vedam only all the gurus had the knowledge. And they in turn gave it to their disciples and the rishis. And they in turn developed it in the way it is now in front of us, with all its different formats, right? What it's coming here. So, then the question comes that if it is like that, why don't we say all the time Vedam is the authority? Vedam alone is the authority, right? And and all this karmam vidhi, what we read in the other in the Kalpa Sutram and in the smriti, there that's where it is spoken, the karmam and karma bhalam, right? The karmam, what you do, and its results, it's all spoken in the Kalpa Sutram as well as in the smriti, right? So but if you keep it as related to this, because it was compiled by the rishis, the sutrams, Kalpa Sutrams and others, there is a possibility. People will say that it could be that rishi's imaginations that he is saying this thing. That is why you have to keep asking this question again. Where did the rishis get it from? How did they get it? If it is through Yoga Siddhi, where did they get to know about the Yoga Siddhi? How did they know that through the particular yoga practices, these particular siddhis they will develop? And if you say, how did they get that knowledge? The connection between the siddhi and the sadhana, where did they get that from? If you say it is coming from the guru, where did the guru get it from? Ultimately, it all ends up at Vedam. Vedam is the whole, how do you say, it ends there, it terminates there, everything finishes there. Vedam is the authority, right? So that is why, even when we say, these books were, Bhagavatam was compiled by Vedavyasa Maharshi, Mahabharatam was compiled by Vedavyas, Ramayanam was compiled by Valmiki, and similarly all other great literature in the Shastram, even though we say these people have compiled it, we know very well the background of all is Vedam. Vedam is the force behind everything. This is the way to understand. Do not think like the way you talk about other scriptures in the world about Vedam. You see, you shouldn't think Vedam is like, say for example, about Bible, how it is spoken, right? After Jesus left, we have got a time span allotted to that, when Bible was revealed. Similarly, Quran also. I'm saying about other scriptures in this world. You can't take it like that, Vedam. Vedam's position is different, right? So, because you won't find things like this. If you perform a particular yagam, like Adhiratram or Agnishtomam or whatever it is, what Vedam is saying is that after your life in this world, you will get this benefit from that sacrifice what you have done. Very categorically, Vedam says this, right? And so, where is the proof if you ask? No, you can't ask for that, because you won't understand it even if it's spoken. Vedam's position is like that. Do you understand what I'm saying? You don't look at Vedam and start checking it out, everything in the Vedam is correct or not. Vedam is always authority. All spiritual topics, if you want to verify, you have to know the dharmam first. And that is how you get to know, verify that. Yeah, and you know, like in material life, you want to know everything, the result before you, what the result will come, and then you perform an action. But in Vedam, you can't bring that principle into this, right? So, and in the same way, say for example, if I chant the holy name, my sinful reactions will all get destroyed, right? Now, how will you be able to find it out with a computer or with a camera? This thing, you won't be able to prove that, can you? Neither with a camera or with a computer, that you won't be able to capture this. That by chanting the holy name, you will get free from sinful reactions, right? So, so because of that, will you reject that on that basis? If it is like that, that shows that how bad we are. Bad in the sense that how poor we are spiritually, underdeveloped spiritually. That's what it is indicating that. That if everything I have to understand through Google and WhatsApp and YouTube and all that, and that's the only way I can accept knowledge, that shows my level of understanding about life. Isn't it? That's what it shows. That it has come to that level now, is it not? Most of the people will not accept anything unless it is in the Google or in the YouTube or whatever it is, books or written books or something. But in Vedam, that principle won't work. Principle won't work, right? So, so like papam punyam, sinful reactions and pious results, no camera can tell you that. No computer can tell you that. No Google can tell you that. Can you? So such knowledge is only possible from the Vedam. It's a difficult thing for most of the people because we are all frightened. Everybody has some fear inside when they do, even when you kill someone. He also knows that he's not completely free from guilt inside. Sometimes you kill people and then they later on they repent for that, for what they have done, isn't it? So in the same way, that everyone, where is that awareness coming from? Because Vedam is present in everybody in the form of knowledge, right? And sometimes that knowledge, a spark of that comes out. And that is that feeling of guilty feeling when you do some sinful things. Many things in this world, even without Shastram telling us, we know it is wrong to do certain things. Just like you're driving on the road, a rabbit or a squirrel is crossing the road. You feel like stopping. You don't feel like killing him straight away. Because there is life in that. Is it not? Where is that thought coming from? You may not have studied Vedam, but something is telling you from inside, there is life in there. I have no right to kill that life. Where is this knowledge coming from? What it is saying is that Vedam and Antaryami inside is connected very closely. Vedam knowledge means knowledge of the Antaryami. Basically, that's what it is. So, Antaryami's knowledge sometimes comes out directly to us like this, instead of coming through Parambara and all that. in certain instances in our own life, you will see this knowledge coming out like a spark. For example, say some incident happened in your life, very distressful thing happened. After a few days, few weeks, you think about it. You are not feeling so much distress about it anymore. Why? Why is that? When the incident happened, say a death happened, somebody very close to you died, immediately you feel very depressed and very disturbed and you feel completely lost, right? But as time passes on, after days and weeks and months, it has gone into memory. Whole thing has become memory. And you are back to your normal state again. Well, how is that happening? This is Vedam. This is Vedam. Vedam is present inside as Antaryami. Vedam and Antaryami is not different basically. That Antaryami changes your state of consciousness based on this time factor, under the influence of time. It goes away. That depression and frustration and unhappiness all goes away from you and you come back to your healthy state again. This happens. So that is why we are saying here, lot of things in life, you don't know about it and you don't have any instruments to monitor it. Neither the camera, nor the computer, nor any other instruments can record these things. These are all the subtle sides of life. And this, rishis had the access to that. Because this knowledge is permanently present in this world. But you have to learn how to tap it from the source, from the Antaryami. Source is Antaryami. From there, how to tap these things, right? So, and similarly, pabam punyam, pious thing, you see that. Just like we know that killing cows is sinful, right? Now, how come we are accepting that? On what basis? So, there is argument like this, that we drink the milk of the mother and we grow up, and similarly in the absence of mother's milk, you take the milk of the cow and you are growing up. These are logic given to us to convince us on a mundane level. On a mundane level. But killing cows is sinful is understood from a spiritual level in a different way. Why it is sinful? That living entity's presence, all demigods present in that body. Right? And Krishna himself says, who has all the Vedic knowledge, as Krishna says, he himself says his cows are dear to me. So from their statement you are accepting that. That is a spiritual way of accepting that. On a mundane level, to prove to people, you say that killing the cows are sinful. And after some time, when you have absorbed that idea strongly inside, you start realizing the importance of cow in life. And you start seeing a different way the cow than the way you have seen it before. It's not. So things like this, you can see at that time how the knowledge of the Vedam comes to us in different forms and helps us to our, even though you have not studied Vedam, it is still working in this world in different ways with people. Right? So here, similarly, sinful reactions, that something is sinful. Who decides that? How do we get that understanding that something is sinful? You may or may not. It's not that after you read Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literature that you decided not to kill others. Then you had certain feeling. Apart from the making of the law, when you see a living entity is separated from its body, the suffering that it goes through, and you start questioning yourself, what right do I have for another jiva who has come to this world in another body to destroy it? An intelligent person will think like that. I have that knowledge also is a part of the Vedam. So that is how sinful activity, pious activity, all these things have come into this world. Right? So these two concepts, pabam, punyam, sinful activity, pious activity, that for that it doesn't have any form, it doesn't have any color, it doesn't have any smell. Can you? Pabam punyam, You cannot know by looking at its form or looking at its color or looking, smelling that, because they are so subtle, isn't it? Right? But they are truth as far as Vedam is concerned. Vaidika Satyam it is. Right? So, only thing is, Pabam Punyam in the Vedam, when it is spoken in the Puranam, it is spoken in the Puranic style. Puranic style is little different. See, the principle in the Vedam, when they want to give a certain understanding of Pabam Punyam, Pabam Punyam. Life is all Pabam Punyam, isn't it? Everything if you take in our own life, lot of it is Pabam, lot of it is Punyam. Right? So this Pabam Punyam concept, that means sinful reaction and pious activities, this concept itself, right, it's spoken in the Puranam in a particular way, right? In its own language, Puranic language, it is spoken, right? And that is what the rishis have spoken in their way, right? So, if you ask a question, how did the rishis understand that these things are sinful and these things are pious? How did they know that? How did they know that, right? If you ask that question, the pramanam is this, that there is no pramanam anywhere it says, like this, right? Then people will say, maybe they have started saying like this and it becomes a habit with them to keep saying like this, that you should not kill other living entities, or you shouldn't give pain to another living entity. This is just to have manufactured something and they propagated it like that. People can say like that, right? And they establish that in the society. They introduce that into the society like that. So then you may say that maybe they have fallen into illusion, Brahma. That is called the Brahma. You know what Brahma means? Brahma means that suppose a kind of a hysteria. You start thinking something and somebody else also agrees with you. A few people agree together and they say that it's all sinful doing all these things. And then they introduce that into the society. Is it that how it has happened? That question will come. That question will come, right? So, and are they saying like that, by performing a sacrifice like this, you will get these results in your next life, in the heavenly planets? And that what that means is that one rishi has got Brahmam. You know this word Brahmam, don't you? Brahmam is the word used, remember in the Prabhupada mentions this, the four things, right? Brahmam pramadam vipralipsa karana padavam means tendency to commit mistakes, imperfect senses, propensity to cheat, and the fourth one, to be under illusion, right? These four things. You remember Prabhupada talks about that. And out of that, Brahmam is one of them. Brahmam pramadam vipralipsam karana padavam. Imperfect senses is karana padavam. Karana padavam. Karana means the senses. The faults of the senses, right? And pramadam is that Brahmam pramadam vipralipsam karana padavam. Imperfect senses, then propensity to cheat. Yeah, propensity to cheat. And then the other one is tendency to commit mistakes and imperfect senses. So, out of these, Brahmam, to be under illusion, is Brahmam. To be under illusion. So, did the illusion capture the rishi? And is that this happen? Is how it happened? This question will come. You know, in Vedam, they don't let you go easily like that, get away with anything. That, oh, it's just accept authority. That's not the system. System is this. They analyze the rishi's mind also. Did rishis get influenced by Maya? Illusion. That's called Brahma. Did that happen to them? Right? So, then, and these are questions raised against them, when they asked against that, right? So, why we are saying like this, that no, it's not. Why? Vedam is their authority. So, we are trying to prove Vedam. You remember today morning when we started, the first thing was Vedam is apaurusheyam. That nature of the Vedam is such, anything you have taken from the Vedam, because it is Vedic knowledge that the rishis have spoken, that knowledge is not touched by Maya. You understand? That knowledge is not touched by Maya, because it is Vedic knowledge. So it is on the that that this Vedam, because Vedam says this, we don't question that anymore. It is the Vedam, right? So now here, suppose somebody got Brahmam. Brahmam means this illusion, right? If that illusion comes to him, that illusion won't go very easily, isn't it? Suppose somebody is under illusion, it is difficult to get out of that illusion, right? Say, for example, you know that famous explanations, rope and the snake, right? Rope looks like the snake, right? So you have to ask the question, how did he misunderstand the rope as a snake? You have to answer that question. Rope is rope, snake is snake. How did you misunderstand the rope as snake? Right? So, so that is called Brahmam. This is called Brahmam. It's an example of Brahmam. It is due to Brahmam this has happened. Right? So, so how did this Brahmam happen to the rishis? If it is a Brahmam for the rishis, or then now rishis have said so many things in the Karmakandam. Lot of things spoken, right? And there they are saying to us, if I do this karmam, this is the result. There's a lot there. Different karmam and the different results from that. What will happen from that? Would you say that like the Brahmam happens to a normal person of misunderstanding a rope for a snake, is that such a Brahmam has made them to write all these results in the same way? Do you understand the logic? See, rope and snake is Brahmam, is it not? It's Brahmam it is. He said similarly a Brahmam for a rishi has made him to write all these results of your own karma in the way what he is saying there. You can ask that question, right? So, but you are asking this question only because you have not studied Vedam properly. That is why. If you have studied Vedam and all the Vedic karma rituals, all the Vedic rituals, all this yagam, homam, yajnam and everything, right? And how complex they are, and how complex their results are, when you read that and understand it properly, then you will never say this. This question won't come, that they were written this under Brahmam, under illusion. Right? So, it will never be possible to think like that. That all these different yagam, homam, yajnam, everything what is spoken in the Vedam, and the results of all that what is spoken in the Vedam, if you bring them together and if you study it seriously, you will know how complex they are, and you will never be able to say this statement that they wrote all these things under Brahmam. Under Brahmam. You know, we talked about this before, Varaha Avataram and Yajnam spoken, isn't it? Yajnavataram it is called. So why is that? Vedam has given so much importance to all this yajnam and homam and yagam. You will never find rituals like this in any other religion like in the Vedic religion, Vedic philosophy or Vedic literature. The complexity of that, every religions in this world have their own rituals, isn't it? All religions have. But have you ever noticed the religious, the rituals in the Vedam, I'm talking about Karmakandam in the Vedam, so complex and so difficult to perform, and such results spoken so precisely of the activities of those yagam and homam, spoken in such length and such detail, you will never find it in any other religion. Nobody else has got it like that, like the way it is in the Vedam, right? So why, and would you think that this were written out like they written a fiction? They sat there and wrote something like this and released it to the world. Would you think like that? Would you think that is good intelligence to think like that? You can understand when you, this is what I'm saying, when you don't know about Vedam, most of these commentators or historians, without knowing the depth of the Vedam in our life, in our very existence itself, without knowing its subtlety, they are making these comments and judging the Vedam from their viewpoint. And they have spoiled the world because of this. People have lost all that understanding of the authority of the Vedam. When you say about Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, you can accept it. Krishna is saying Bhagavad Gita. And many, many great acharyas and devotees have commended Bhagavad Gita to make us understand, right? But where did Bhagavad Gita come from? Background is Vedam. And that is why we are saying that Prasthanatrayam, what they call it, Gita, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram and Upanishads, the three things together, it's called the Prasthanatrayam. Gita is one of that, Bhagavad Gita. And Brahma Sutram is another one. And Upanishads are the third one. So these three departments of the Vedam knowledge is coming, but their background is Vedam again. It is from the Vedam it has come, right? So in such specific way and such a precise way to say certain things in the Vedam, the way they have written that, right? And they have built up a framework around this, rituals in the Vedam, right? Karmakandam I'm talking about. With such precision and such specificity, they have written all these things and said to us that these karmam, if you perform, these results will come from that. Take example. Dasharatha performed Putrayameshti. He didn't have children, you know that. Dasharatha didn't have any children. And then he was told, perform Putrakameshti, you will have children. Now, if you say this to somebody today, what will they say about it? Isn't it? But Ramayanam is very openly telling us that how Dasharatha performed Putrakameshti, he knew that he will have the results from that. And then after the sacrifice, the charu was given to all the wives, and very soon they became pregnant. And from, you know, how Ramachandra was born, Lakshmana was born, and Bharata and Shatrughna were born. From the different wives, they all were born. So, Dasharatha was stupid. That how come he was able, because he knew that this is in the Vedam. And the results will come, he knew. And even though Dasharatha had some prarabdham not to have children and all that, it was all bypassed and they were given these children to him. That is how Ramchandra's appearance comes. Similarly, what is his name? Anga and Sunida in the fourth canto. Right? So, Anga didn't have any children. Sunida was his wife. Now, Anga performed putra, a similar yagam like Putrayameshti, Dasharatha performed. Only thing was, he got this son, Vena. Vena was his son. Now, Vena came, and Vena, even though his son is mother is Sunita, Vena's vasanas were very poor, different totally. Now, Bhagavatam is saying to us, this Vena's, from mother's side, they were not very good people. Their vasanas have all come through Vena here. Why was he like this? They asked this question. Rishis immediately answered that question, saying to us, due to this mother's side, the connection. Connection from the mother's side. That is why he was like that. Now, if you ask me the proof for that, how can I give you a proof? Where will you get a proof for this? So, there are things in the Vedam like this, that if you ask questions that proof for everything, you won't get it. You have to know where all this is coming from. That Putragameshti Yagam and its result, what happened. Similarly, Nabhi didn't have any children. Right? Nabhi. And then that is when he told the rishis, rishis told him, you perform a sacrifice. Yeah? So Nabhi said to the rishis, what is your sangalpam? You know, they are telling you about the power of sangalpam inside. So Nabhi said, I want to have a son like the Supreme Lord himself. So when the Supreme Lord appeared in the sacrifice, he is asking the rishis who are there, that what was your sangalpam? He said, our king doesn't have any children. He wants to have a son like you. Then the king Krishna says, there is nobody like me. There is only me. So I will have to come myself. And that is how he comes as Rishabhadev. Isn't it? So do you think all this is just stories for fun to read at time when you are not getting sleep? Is that what it is? If you approach Bhagavatam like that, it will remain like that forever. But we must know that all those sacrifices and all are coming from the Vedam. Whatever Rishabhadev father Nabhi did, those sacrifices is all based on the Vedam. And it is because of the Vedic sacrifice that Krishna appeared in the sacrifice and asked for what you want, he asked the rishis. Again, Vedam is the background behind it. If we look at this way, throughout Bhagavatam, wherever you find the sacrifices mentioned, it's all coming from the Vedam. What to talk about this? Later on, when Krishna was there in Vrindavanam, this is a recent one, 5,000 years only, when Nanda Maharaj wanted to perform a yaga, so they gave him the Maharishis who came there. They told him, you are a Vaishya and you look after the cows, right? So they gave him a yagam called Gosavam. Gosavam means that you bring all your cows, feed them nicely, worship them, and then Nanda Maharaj also, like a cow, he has to go wandering around eating grass. Like a cow, he has to do that. It's a part of that Gosavam. It is in the Bhagavatam spoken. So, that Gosavam he had to perform because it's a part of that sacrifice. Nanda Maharaj had total faith in that. That sacrifice will work. And he had to, for some reasons he has performed, I can't remember what it was, that he had to do this. So what I'm saying is, all these personalities in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, Mahabharatam and all had 100% faith in the authority of the Vedam. Today that is our biggest problem. We have read all these fiction books and all the novels and all that, and we are thinking Vedam is also like another fiction. Or only thing is more interesting than the fiction itself. We start coming to thinking about Vedam in that way. And that's why we are finding difficulty in spiritual life. It's because of this. Because we have a whole approach is so wrong, the way we have so disconnected from the authority of the Vedam, and how Vedam is in everything. Where did all this Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, where would they come from? Vedam. What is behind them is Vedam. All the great devotees, jnanis, even behind Krishna, it is Vedam. That's what Krishna is saying also, isn't it? Vedescha sarver ahameva vedyam. Remember in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedandakrit Veda Videva Chaham. That through Vedam you understand me, Krishna says. Not through me you understand Vedam. Through Vedam you understand me. Vedandakrit Veda Videva Chaham. You understand, that means even to prove God, you need Vedam. God exists, how do you prove? Through Vedam. Only through Vedam you have any, it's the only door to the divinity or to the truth. Vedam is that window towards the truth. So, therefore, how the rishis maintained this karmakandam side, that you perform this karma, the results will come. And even if you make a small mistake in that, the result will not come. Sometimes opposite results will come. That's how they were precise about these things. If you make a small change in, you can't change it, edit it or alter it or anything in any way. What is there, you have to accept it and do it exactly like that, what is spoken there. And that is why today people find it difficult. Because some of the ingredients for is not available. Kali Yuga is like that. You won't get anything. The ingredients are not available. Somalata. You need somalata. Where will you get somalata from? In deep forest sometimes you may find it. But to know what is somalata, first of all, nowadays everything there is a duplicate. Isn't it? So with the duplicate, if you do yagam, the result also will be duplicate. You won't get the right results, right? So that is the problem today. That means they have told us clearly, precisely, these ingredients are required. You need ghee, a lot of it. But where do you get a cow today, which you can give you pure ghee? All the ghee cows are not looked after properly. Either they are injected with chemicals and if you make ghee from all this Tesco milk and all that, it won't be proper ghee even, right? Okay, for marketing you can put deshi ghee and all that, but are they really deshi ghee or pure ghee? Where is the pure ghee today? Not only ghee, you can't get anything pure today, can you? Even the grains are not pure because it's grown with, even though you may say organic and all that, how organic are they? In many things are like that. Somewhere there is some impurity got into it. So nothing is pure in the modern world. Nothing. Similarly, people who are doing all these things, how pure are they in their life? Say, suppose you have left your traditional culture and gone and taken up some job in a factory or in an institution. And after retirement, you come back and start doing your yagam homam. Nobody will accept you. Because you lost it already. The moment you left your... That means the tradition, what you were supposed to follow, you have not followed it. And then there is no point in you performing any yagam or homam. I mentioned this to you before. For people who are born in that family, who are supposed to do that, if they gone and studied medicine or something, and performed surgery and all that, they can come back, cannot go back to the temple and engage in their service, what they were doing before. They can't. They are not allowed anymore to do that. That is the system. There are so many doctors in this world like that. Because they were involved in the surgery process and all that, which is not authentic from the Vedan point of view, many of them, they cannot come back and engage in the rituals, what is associated with the Veda. They are not allowed. They will be asked to stay separately. They themselves know that. They'll stay away. So that means Vedam was so particular about so many things. About this karmakandam, very particular about the ingredients, the people who are doing that, and the time they are doing it. All sorts of rules and regulations, they have tied the whole thing together very well, right? And when you read all that, would you think that that person who has given all these things, he has done under illusion or Brahman? How can you think like that? It's difficult to accept it that with that, right? So that means our intelligence won't accept it, that statement, that these were written in illusion. In illusion, one thing. The second thing was that if you take that understanding, right, that our buddhi won't accept it. Because my buddhi tells me one, buddhi means my intelligence tells me, how can it be that these things are spoken so precisely, and if these people who have written this, they were under illusion, that they wrote all these things, it's difficult to accept that. They are saying to us that you have to read this Vedam, the sacrifices about it, what they are saying. These sacrifices, if you perform, these results will come. With such a guarantee, they are writing it. For example, Putrakameshti, I am saying one example, that they told, the rishis told Dasharatha, if you perform Putrakameshti, you will have sons. You see? You will have sons. How could they say this to Dasharatha with such confidence? Unless they knew that what they are talking about. If they had told something and misled him, their heads would have gone. Dasharatha would have taken their heads off. So they knew the kings were like that. That you could not go and give some false information and mislead them. But you can see from their life and their traditions that whatever they have spoken is all based on the authority of the... It was the Vedam behind them giving that strength to say these things to them. Right? So, one thing. Secondly, this is one. I'm just trying to make you understand what I'm trying to say is that if our these arguments from the historians and the modern, what you call that, the people who comment on these things, Vedam, if they come up with this kind of comments, how you should look at it from your side. So, first thing is this, if it is Brahman, what they thought it is, like the way Brahman it is, it's not Brahman. Secondly, that if a Brahman, if it is Brahman, if you say that they, in their leisure time, in their illusion, they wrote all these things, right? Can illusion come for everybody in the same way? All the rishis. See, whatever they have written, many rishis are accepting it. There's a lots of rishis. For example, in Karmakandam, if you look at Adhiratram and all that, the Adhiratram procedures, Adhiratram is one of them, and all the procedures for that is not only coming from one rishi. It's a group of rishis who have combinedly formulated the rules of that and who are explained it. Different rishis have a participation in that. Now, if it is illusion, can illusion happen to all these rishis at the same time? You have to look at it that way also. From there also you can see that this is not something that has been manufactured by a few people. And that those rishis who have performed those sacrifices or who have put it down, the rules connected with that, the rules of that sacrifice, which was followed in Satyugam or Tredayugam, were followed in Dwabarayugam also, at the end of Dwabarayugam also. So if it was based on Brahman, and if there was a proper code or a proper setup for that, how come they followed in Dwabarayugam and Tredayugam and even in the beginning of Kaliyugam? How could they could follow that? If it was, how come it was never changed, it remained as it is, right? So, these things are there in the Vedam itself. All these things are discussed in the Vedam to make sure that people don't get carried away by the illusion of our mind, right? So, there are a lot of interesting things like this. If you look into certain books also, they will say. So, once it so happened that there was a one poet, right? He wrote a book called Kusumanjali. It's a famous book. In that Kusumanjali, what he wrote was that he said that if you perform yagam, you will get surgam, means you'll go to heavenly planets, right? One person got this understanding in him, right? So he got this illusion idea in his head that he's talking about some king, somebody. He got this idea that if I perform yagam, I can go to heavenly planets. He learned this from the Veda, right? So he realized that the rishis have given all these things. You know, when I'm saying rishis, Vedam, Vedavyasa Maharshi, he taught to his disciples. They were all rishis, weren't they? Pailan, Vaishambayanan, Jaimini, Sumandhu, Atharva, all that. They were all rishis. So all these rishis, they have mentioned many things about this Vedam. And if they have written all these things deliberately like this to mislead others, for what? Say, for example, it's not Brahman, it's not illusion, but they have spoken all these things with certain other motive behind it. What can they be? For example, they say, in Vedam it says this, Khyadi, Labham, Puja, three things. Khyadi, Labham, Puja. What are they? Khyadi means for name and fame, prashasti. You want to become popular. For that purpose, did they write all these things? Or Labham means to make money from that. Puja means to be respected, adarava. Everybody else should respect you for that purpose. So, khyadi, labham, puja. Is it for these three purposes did they compile all this yagam, homam, yajnam and everything, right? So, you can see that even very simple things in life, they have standardized. Who? Rishis. Standardized in the sense, they are saying, if you are bathing is not a big thing, isn't it? Everybody is bathing in this world. But how to bathe, they have put rules to it. You know that. How to bathe, there are rules for that. How to bathe. How to dry your body, there is rules for that. Nobody is following all this thing, that's another thing. But there is rules for that. So things like this, how to brush the teeth, there is rules for that. So like this, if you look at it, you can see that how to eat, rules for that. How to sit, rules for that. How to sleep, rules for that. And every minute thing in life, they have put rules on it. Books are available for that. You can read it still, how to do it. And if you read that, you will think, oh, is this all necessary? You will think. You may think like that, but there are rules. Now, what do you understand from that? Why did they put all these rules and regulations on all your life like this? Similarly for Sandhyavandanam also. Sandhyavandanam is important for the Brahmanas. They are supposed to perform in all the three Sandhyas, which they don't now anymore. Most of them are busy with the office work, so they don't have the time, right? So, in everything, even our man-woman relationship, they put rules on that. When the husband should associate with the wife, rules on that, is it not? So, today's world, nothing is followed. But why is that a society were so particular and specific about all these things? You have to ask that question also. That did they do it deliberately for the sake of fame and name and control others and for getting respect from others, right? Or to cheat others. So you have to go back with your intelligence to the time they lived in this world, right? So now, what have we been taught? We were told our ancestors were all monkeys, and from monkeys came, gradually we developed and we became the, we started walking with two hands and two legs, right? So, and that is our present thing, what is taught in the to the children, right? That, and then they said we developed and we started how to cook food, that we found out the fire. I've studied that. This is what I was taught, that in the world history. And I still have those books written by quite well-learned professors and scholars in the history books they have written. And there is pictures there of my ancestors, how they were looking like. Adima Manusha, they were called. The people from the caves. And how they came out of the caves and they found out one day fire existed. And with full authority they have written all these things. Right? Who? These historians. And they introduced in the school and everybody is still studying that. Cavemen, they were called. And after they found out the fire, they learned the technique of cooking the food. And they realized that by cooking the food, you can eat better. And they learned how to kill animals with the weapons they developed. This is the way we are taught in the university and in the way the human society developed according to the thing. Now, we are talking about the people who are so particular about how to bathe, how to brush the teeth, how to sleep, how to eat, and how the relationship should be between man and woman, husband and the wife, marriages, all the rules associated with that. These two things don't match. Would they? They don't match. Now whom do you trust? Whom do you trust in these situations? Right? If there is a society which existed way before what the historians are referring to, and who had a lifestyle, who were very particular about these things, how to bathe, how to eat, how to sleep, and how to conduct your life with husband, wife, all these relationships were so precisely spoken. How would you say that that society was not developed? And we could say like this, right? And so the mind doesn't allow to accept this. Mind causes problems there, right? Because we will say that suppose somebody has laid out certain rules like that to cheat others, right? If it is meant for cheating others, they won't do it themselves. But what do we find here? These rishis followed all these things themselves very much, more than anybody else. The rishis, in their life, they followed these rules and regulations much more than anybody else. Suppose you want to cheat somebody, what do you do? You write it, publish a book, give it to others. You don't do it. All you want to do is to make money from that or to cheat others, control others through that. If that is the case, what happens? The person who has written all these things, he won't follow it. He won't do it himself. He will make others to do it. And in that way he will control. A lot of things happen like that in the modern world. People control others through these kind of things. They themselves don't follow. That is what they mentioned here. Khyadi, labham, puja. They want to be worshipped. So they have written all these rules and regulations and given to others. You all follow this. And they on their own, they don't follow anything else. Right? And they will do all these things and look at everybody else whether they are following it or not. And then secondly, they will see if there is any profit from that they can make for themselves. So this kind of things, karma paddhati, they are called, you don't find that in the rishi's life. What they have done was that in every Puranams and Upanishads also, when you look, the rishis were more particular about following the rules than the students themselves. So from that you have to understand, we have to understand, that they didn't do anything for the sake of money, for the sake of recognition, or for the sake of profit, or name or fame. None of them. Because only then you can do all these things. If you are doing it for the sake of recognition in the world, or name and fame, or for worship from others, or for some material profit, you won't do it yourself. Because what you want is something different. But the rishis themselves, if you look at Vasishtha's life, Vishwamitra's life and all that, or Bharadwaj and all, you will find that they themselves followed it more than anybody else. What does that indicate? What does that point out? That is telling us that they had total faith in what they were doing and total knowledge of that. And you can see that the karmam of a grihastha, grihastha has got so much karmam to perform. They were more proficient and they were more particular about it than the students who went to them. The students were learning from them, but they were teaching them and practicing themselves. This was the reason behind that. So from this you have to know that they didn't do it for the sake of any profit or any name or fame or for any worship. It was purely done because they had total faith in what they were doing. That's the reason why they did that. Right? So, for example, so that is why Dharma Shastram, it is difficult to understand Dharmam. And Dharmam is related to all these things. That certain things, what you are doing, what's the motive behind it, and a proper understanding of that karma is required, right? So, this is the reason that in the Bhagavatam you see, when it is said, Kalau tad hari kirtanam, right? Kridheja dhyayate Vishnu, Tredayam yajato mahe, Dwabare parijaryayam, Kalau tad hari kirtanam, right? So, Kalau tad hari kirtanam is spoken on the same way. Right, Kridheja dhyayate Vishnu, Tredayam yajato mahe, Dwabare parijaryayam, Kalau tad hari kirtanam. Hari kirtanam, or chanting the holy name, is the process for this age, and it must be done. Because they knew that dhyanam is not possible, like in the Kriyayugam, and yajnam is not possible, like in the Tredayugam, and deity worship also is difficult, like in the Dwabarayugam. Therefore, kalautad hari girtanam, chanting the holy name for Kaliyugam, they made this decision and gave it to us, the rishis, right? So much karmam spoken. It's such a vast ocean of karmam it is, Vedam, right? So, and they followed it. That is the difference. If it was for any other purpose, they wouldn't have followed it. They would have told others, they left all the book for us to follow. And they themselves would have made their life comfortable. They didn't do that. Instead, what do you find? They followed that Vedam statement, karmam, for Harikirtanam, or chanting the holy name for Kaliyugam. They stressed on that. What I'm saying is that this chanting holy name, many people think it is a very light thing. It doesn't have so much potency, they feel. Whereas they go into all kinds of meditation classes and they perform all sorts of other things, isn't it? Processes, I'm saying. But that's because we have not understood the power of this holy name, like the way it is spoken in the Bhagavatam, and the way the rishis have given importance to it. For this particular age, looking at our situation, it is spoken like that. So what I'm trying to say is, if they were following this themselves, then what it indicates is that they had no intention to cheat others. When do you cheat others? When you don't follow yourself. That's when it becomes cheating. Suppose you say something and you are not following yourself, and then you are telling others to follow. That is cheating. But that's not what you find in the life of the rishis. They followed themselves and then they told us to follow. So that indicates that they were not doing it with a cheating intention. That is how you understand that. So I'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll finish this tomorrow.